Around Comics, Episode 23.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
I am not Tom Caters.
Tom Caters is on vacation this week, and filling his chair is our good friend and the artist of Scar Tissue and various other comics now, Mr. Dave Wachter.
I am not Tom Caters.
And our next guest is the manager of Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. He is the large and in charge, Mr. Mark Beatty.
I am Tom Gators.
Gentlemen, welcome. I would like to throw out a program. You know, we were supposed to have Rick Remender on the show today. We had some technical difficulties, and rather than waste the time of the incredibly busy Mr. Rick Remender, we decided to let him go. We are going to reschedule that interview, and hopefully we will bring him to you in the following months. But we will talk about Rick Remender probably a little bit later in the show. If you have not checked out his work, please do so. Fear Agent, Strange Girl, Nightmare, the list goes on and on. Last Christmas is a new comic of his. Please check it out. Rick is a fantastic creator, and we were deeply saddened to miss him on the show today. So
I could pretend to be Rick, but I don't know. Nobody knows what Rick sounds like, right? He's never done a podcast, I don't think.
We could do that.
Hello, this is Rick Remender. Good to be here. Thank you. I made it just in time.
He's a Hungarian immigrant. That's
I'm Hun, I tell you.
So Rick, if you are listening, thank you very much for hanging in with us. We're sorry that we weren't able to get you on the show today. We will try to get you on very, very soon. A quick reminder, Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please come by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. Dark Tower is now offering a 20% discount on purchases made during our show recordings. Just mention Around Comics when you check out and receive 20% off your purchase. It's that easy. So, guys, no Rick Remender today. So
womp, 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 womp.
We're gonna pull into the comics bag. We're gonna dig deep and we're gonna pull out the number one topic that has been requested. We're gonna piss off everyone that's wanted to be on the show when we talked about this.
Rascals / Fiction.
No, we are not going to talk about Our Gang / Fiction. We are going to talk about
Stooges.
No, but you're getting closer. We're talking about the silver screen. We are talking about comics in movies and comics as movies and movies as comics.
Hollywood
and comics. Absolutely. So, guys, it's kind of a good time to talk about this. X3 just came out, so movies are right in the forefront. It's really been a great, five or six years now for comics and movies.
I love it. I have to say, this is, you know, my cousin, who's also sort of like a brother to me, him and I grew up reading comics and like dreaming that someday they would make, you know, really good comic book movies. And, you know, we were sitting down the other day, we were going to go see X3, and we were both kind of talking about how, you know, the last few years has been a dream come true for us, because we finally get to see all these great characters that we grew up loving on the, you know, on the big screen, and most, if not all, have been done pretty darn well. Even the not good ones, or the ones that, you know, people maybe complain about the most, I still find a fascination with, and even the worst of them, I on some level enjoy.
Anyone who lived through David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury, Roger Corbin's did Fantastic Four,
Captain America, back in
live action Spider-Man show. It was awful. All the old stuff. That's the thing, man. Growing up, they were all just so terrible. You get your hopes up every time one of these new things comes out, and then it was just dashed on the rocks. And now to finally have stuff that actually lives up to the material.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that stuff
was so satisfying.
It wasn't even like BBC TV bad. I mean, it was beyond that, you know.
Did you ever see that Daredevil? That was like when the Daredevil meets the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, that was the worst. He was actually blindfolded.
Yeah.
The whole idea behind a guy in a mask is not to know that he's blind. There was no way not to know he was blind.
Or the one where he meets Thor.
Oh, that was equally great.
Oh, hello, I'm Thor. Oh, God, awful.
There's been commercials better than that movie. You know, like the bad, what was that, MasterCard or something, or Visa commercial with...
Oh, with the underdog and
all
the superheroes?
Yeah, I mean, that was better than some of those
films. That was way better than a lot of... You know, for us growing up, or for me growing up anyway, you know, superheroes on the Hollywood side, the best of it was probably the Incredible Hulk TV show. Or actually, it was just The Hulk.
But it was nothing like the comic book Hulk. That was the only thing that bothered me. Like bullets.
Well, he was big and green and...
Big green and big.
I loved it. I grew up on that show.
Oh, sure, but it was probably the best show, and it was the best comic adaptation that Hollywood put out for years.
Well, next to the Shazam Isis Power Hour.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
Yeah, so, you know, if you step away from the live action, we as comic fans really survived on cartoons forever. You know, it was Spider-Man.
What about Reb Brown's Captain America? That was fantastic stuff.
You were at the register.
Shield.
We already talked about how crappy that
clear
was.
Clear shield, motorcycle helmet. That was God,
oh the clear.
It was just the most
that lodged on the front of his bike.
Yep. Yeah.
For anyone that doesn't.
Perfect
no.
rendition of Cap.
For anyone that hasn't listened before, Mark is a huge Captain America fan. That's really your guy. So, you know, what's it feel like to have your favorite character just absolutely defiled in a show?
Twice.
Yeah, but at the time,
who was the other guy that did the 1990?
Oh, I don't know who it was, but I saw that it was
name.
Terrible.
With the rubber,
it was terrible
with the rubber
when they
ears.
Take...
They couldn't even just make holes in the mask and put his ears through it.
Wasn't that the one where the Red Skull was no longer red?
No, the Red Skull was
skull.
Italian.
Yeah.
Italian.
They just made him into
apparently
like
he was
Mussolini.
He was no longer a Nazi.
Nazis
horrible.
Were, you know,
but
taboo.
Skull.
They were taboo. At the, you know, taboo Nazis.
Can't talk about Nazis. That's...
I mean, the rest of the costume didn't look too bad. But
we're trying to reclaim.
Italian Red Skull and... And you can't even listen with your own ears. I mean,
there's
problems.
Oh, I mean, now don't you think they could do a great Captain America movie? I mean, that one is, especially with you see what... With
It'll be
Brewer.
Daredevil.
What, no.
Especially based on, like, Mark Millar's ultimate Captain America.
Yeah, we've talked before about how much we love the 1940s era Captain America, the Invaders era. Wouldn't that be a great... slice of history to pull out and make a movie about the Invaders?
I think
yeah,
that
would be.
With
or
World
you
War
could
II movies?
Do like what Brubaker did and just have all the nice flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, because I think one of the most interesting things about Cap is that he's a man out of his own time, and I think that is something you could really explore in a film, you know, that character to me. I mean, that was always sort of one of the most interesting things about
that
character.
That is Captain. That is, whenever you look at the baseline of what Captain America is, he has, you know, a moral set and a place in history that is out of time from where we are. That gives, you know, he always is coming at things from a different perspective. That's what makes that character
so interesting.
He's good
and just and
he's from a better time is our perspective of it. A simpler time. You know, from our perspective, it may have not been a simpler time.
It was
but
just
I think
hidden
it was just,
better.
It was the black and white was more distinct back then. Less shades of gray when he was around. You know, when he was first running around, basically. There was the bad guys and the good guys.
Well, you know, I have heard a couple internet rumblings.
Until Noir came along.
Speaking of Cap and the Invaders, if anyone listens to Word Balloon, which is a great interview podcast, John Suntress is kind of the Charlie Rose of comic book. We love you, John. Also a fellow Chicagoan. He just did the Bendis tapes in the last month, and Bendis kind of threw out some hints that Ed Brubaker may be working on an Invaders, like an actual 1940s Invaders comic.
With Howard Chaykin doing art.
Oh, God, no, that wasn't part of the rumor, but I tell you what, you want to talk about something that I've wanted to see for a long time, that is it. But anyway, getting back on to movies. You know, we've talked about some of the misses, which were the late 70s and 80s misses in comic book movies. What have been the big hits in movies for you as a fan? What is your favorite comic book adaption as a movie?
Dave.
Sal? Dave?
Favorite's tough. I would have to say my favorite that everybody else hates is the Hulk.
Oh, God. And here we go.
Here we go.
I don't hate the Hulk.
There are parts of it that are great, like the whole battle in the desert.
Yeah,
fantastic. Hulk.
Very cool.
I love the whole thing. I love the...
you are a huge Hulk supporter.
I am a huge, I'm massive Hulk supporter, but I thought that was a great movie.
I bet you hate that comic book.
But my dad, the Absorbing Man?
I wasn't a big reader of the Hulk comic. I've got like maybe 2-3 years worth of Peter David's run on the Hulk. Like I said before, I was really raised on the TV show, so I thought it had a nice mix of the two. When things happen like they do, the Absorbing Man is his dad instead of him being something else. That's the kind of thing that doesn't even that's not the kind of problem that I ever have with movies. I go into these comic book movies.
You're not worried about continuity and
I'm not worried about it having to be just be like the comic. Right. I want it to be. I don't think it can be. I think it has to be a good movie first, and you can't. And you know that's
well.
It
I don't
has
know.
To be
I mean,
its own take.
The Spider-Man films are pretty. You know,
it
accurate,
does, but they
accurate,
could be like, good. Well, that should be Gwen Stacy on the bridge, not Mary Jane, you know, and all this other
well,
kind
sure,
of stuff.
Well, sure, there's always something you can... My biggest problems with the Hulk, I mean, I thought it looked very nice.
But
I thought the Hulk looked a little strange from time to time. The character, you know, it being a big CGI, you know, character, I thought at some points he looked a little odd, but overall it was well done. I hated Eric Bana. I thought he was terrible. I think he's.
Oh, I thought he was.
I didn't
great.
Think he was. I thought he was that bad. Actually, I didn't think Eric Bana was that bad. The problems I had was the fact that you know the madder he gets, the taller he gets.
Well, they had.
Even the bigger he gets. He just gets tall. He's like freaking 20 feet tall. He's really pissed off.
Yeah, they made three stages of the Hulk in it, and it's basically like three stages of anger for the Hulk. So you have a smaller one, a medium sized one, and then a huge one.
And a super size.
I want a
right,
mini
a super Hulk. Size. Super size the fries, but.
You know, Ang Lee is
I
a
love
great
it.
Director
yeah, I love his
for the right film. If anyone has seen the
Crouching
Ice...
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Well, the one recently.
Is that
Ang
Lee?
Yeah, that's
Ang Lee.
That's a beautiful movie.
That's a really film.
Any of you guys seen the Ice Storm?
Ice Storm. Yeah.
Rides with the Devil?
What did he just...
What it's called? You ever seen that Western?
That was,
yeah,
Gay
that was
cowboy
great.
Oh, Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain, which I just
the
saw
The Hulk
recently, which
was really good.
You know, I didn't hate The Hulk. Once again, there's films... Even the worst, like, probably the worst modern-day comic film that's been made.
Fantastic Four.
Well, other than, like, Catwoman.
Oh, Catwoman does not count. It's not a comic book movie.
You know,
it doesn't count.
I've wiped Catwoman from my brain. Oh.
I like Daredevil a lot, actually. I liked it more. I don't know. There's a scene in Daredevil that
was
so
from Chris.
Perfectly captured from the book.
No.
The scene in the bar where he goes after in the beginning where he goes after I can't think of the character's name. It was in the very beginning of the film when he's in court and then after the guy gets off and he goes and chases
and he goes and kills the guy?
Well, hey, you know, that's
he didn't kill him, the train killed him.
He threw him in front of the train, or didn't stop him from jumping.
I don't have to beat the
scene in the bar was
Batman Begins.
We'll get there.
Fantastic Four as kind of... I mean, I didn't hate the Fantastic Four. I didn't love it, but it
was like a fireworks
display. Even those films, there's like this morbid curiosity.
Yeah.
I can't help but enjoy them on some level. On some, it's like, even if it's awful...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, it's like seeing the thing, seeing... The human. I mean, even like seeing the Human
Torch.
Torch
was great.
Yeah, it was all. It
well,
was just
here,
the thing looked awful.
This is how I would describe the Fantastic Four movie. It was like reading the Fantastic Four. It is
Fantastic Four, almost reading regular Fantastic Four.
It's interesting. You see the characters, you like it, and it's blah blah blah. It doesn't stick with
Hulk.
You. That stop it. That
Daredevil.
Fantastic Four did not stick with me. Now a movie that did stick with me, and Sal and I have had some arguments about this, but
what?
I think the truest movie adaptation of a comic book ever because
Spider-Man
it was because it was basically panel for panel, frame by frame.
Well, Sin City.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, certainly it was, but it
literally was frame.
It was,
frame.
But it was storyboarded.
Did that hurt that movie as a movie because it was so absolutely true to the comics?
Well, I think you certainly had people that didn't enjoy it because it's, you know, it's set in a, you know, in that magical realism set. You know, it's not reality, but it's not pure
fantasy.
Well,
it's Sin City. It's Frank Miller's world.
Well, but we understand that because we've read Sin City, and we understand comics, and we understand how they work. But if you're coming from outside, I think it hurt it in some degree. But I know a lot of people that aren't comic book fans
that
have never read Sin City and that loved it a lot because it has so many elements of, you know, crime noir and that storytelling techniques that was obviously, you know, influential in the original book.
It's an adaptation of a book that's much more cinematic than most comics.
Yeah.
True, absolutely.
So it's easier. It's an easier translation than, say, trying to adapt, you know, Silver Age, you know, Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I probably would agree with you that it is obviously the most truly made, but I think the best of any
Spider-Man
of them is Spider-Man 2. I just think that film was the best combination of Peter Parker and Spider-Man and everything that that character's about and all the elements. And
you know what made Spider-Man 2 great, in my opinion? The screenplay. Chabon?
Chabon.
Okay, Chabon. Yeah, Kelly Sue's pronunciation thread we're going to have to go and add. The screenplay for that movie was so solid. You saw it in the first movie that the effects were there. It was Spider-Man was believable, swinging around the city, blah, blah, blah.
If only it wasn't the Iron Green Goblin.
But in the second one, you didn't really have to deal with the.
And
the
Doc Ock was kick ass.
Doc Ock was cool, though. He was perfect. Yeah.
Throw me the idol. I'll throw you the
whip. Although I always said I thought the guy that should play Dr. Octopus is Elton John. He's got the haircut, the glasses. He looks just like him.
He's tubby.
He's a little tubby.
Maybe a little too flamboyant.
A little tubby. Have you seen Elton John lately?
A little too flamboyant for Dr. Octopus?
The guy wears round glasses.
Hey, he married Aunt May. Or did they ever get married?
No, they dated.
They dated. Elton John would date
Aunt
May.
Can Elton John act?
Elton John would date Aunt May.
I don't know.
He had a sex change operation.
People didn't think he was gay for years, so
I guess he can act.
All right,
yeah,
focus.
Back in the mold,
I'll throw one out at you. How about a movie like that's not a comic book adaptation, but you know the subject is about comic books, like Unbreakable.
I think that is the best. To me, that's the best comic book movie. Because it is so perfect. You don't have to... Anybody can watch that movie. You don't have to know anything about the characters. It's not like you have to know Superman's history or Spider-Man's history or any of these other guys' history. Sin City, you don't have to ever... You can just watch that movie and enjoy it.
Well, I was kind of thinking Sky High.
It's a pretty cool movie.
I like Sky High.
Anything with Kurt Russell's got to vote for me.
Sky High has been on...
What's her name? Anna Lynn Carter.
Sky High has been on HBO like every day, like three times a day.
It's a really enjoyable movie. My wife loves it.
It's cute.
Have you read Grounded?
No.
Yes. Yeah.
Grounded and Sky High are really
very similar.
Yeah, but you know, in different ways, but very fun.
The thing about Unbreakable, though, as I like, is that it does the perfect thing that I always had problems with a lot of these kind of movies, and is that it's the first half of every other movie. It's the coming into his powers part, and you get all these other movies. The first Spider-Man movie. Falls into this trap. The first X-Men movie falls in this trap. You have the first half of the movie where you figure out the origin and getting the powers and you're figuring out about everything. And that's really the best part of the movie. And then the last half of the movie, they feel like they need, we need a villain and we need him to fight something. You know, but that's they sort of tack it on as the second half of the movie.
In Unbreakable, really,
Unbreakable is the other way around. Unbreakable
is
just
nothing like Unbreakable.
Unbreakable is that first half of the movie expanded to be the whole movie. And to me, the best part of the movie is always that first half, and they made that the whole movie in Unbreakable.
Because I can watch that over and over.
Well, you know,
I really do love that movie.
We talked about this last week, and the whole what makes a good villain, and that's. You know, that was that character in Unbreakable. It's like, you know, that
they
concept.
Call me Mr. Glass.
The concept of I'm going to be a villain because the world needs a hero. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I that
and,
was.
And you'll notice there was no rocket powered skateboards in
that movie. Oh gosh. Okay. Yeah. Reference our last episode to hear about rocket powered skateboards.
Was that the editorial note at the bottom of the panel?
He probably needed to do that because nobody listens to this show.
And I believe Alex Ross was involved in the making of that film.
I know that he designed some of the stuff. And
but I think he also talked a lot with him about like sort of the mythology. There was Alex Ross, or there was someone
on the DVD is with Alex Ross.
Yeah. And
I know they have his illustrations in it. Yeah, everything. I remember that. Yeah.
Listen to AroundComics.com. It's not just for 12-year-old boys. It's for 13-year-old boys too.
Did you guys see Comic Supervillains?
Comic book villains. Yeah. It's the guy from.
That's Daniel Logue.
Yeah. That's a great. I mean, that is that was a perfect film in sort of a funny, you know, campy way. But I mean, it's like every comic book collector's dream is like finding that mother load of
that
of hidden comic. Yeah, that collection.
I still have that dream.
When the
that's what that whole movie's about.
When the truck, you know, goes into the lake and you see all of the long boxes fall out of the truck and they're all
spoilers.
Yes, but and you're just like, no, Avengers number 4 is in there.
They're perfect. They've been kept in perfect humidity for 40 years, 50 years, and yeah, that was a fun movie.
You know, a dark, twisted movie, you know, certainly. But
have you ever
but
seen the?
Nope, I haven't seen that one.
Mark Hamill did a fake documentary on
a mockumentary.
Yeah, it was about I can't think of the. It was called Comic Book the Movie, and he played a guy. He was doing a documentary about comic book conventions, and he went to San Diego Con and filmed it all in this character and trying to get like funds for the film and trying to and interviewing all the it was funny and frightening all at the same time because it showed a lot of the what we talked about two episodes ago, all the characters that you find at a convention, and he used it in a sort of way to he was sort of the foil of the film because he took it way more serious than anyone else, but at the same time it was, poking fun at fanboys everywhere. But it was an enjoyable.
Well, speaking of going to San Diego, now our resident artist supreme here, Dave Wachter, you've been to San Diego. You've gone out there to promote Scar Tissue. What is the Hollywood presence like out there? I can't even imagine.
Well, I was actually thinking of this for the interview we're going to do, but I was actually thinking more of L.A. the last time I was out in L.A., which was this last Wizard World L.A., and we had five, six people come up talking about optioning,
And Scar Tissue is, that was like the release of issue number 3.
Yeah, and you've got people coming, oh, that's a good premise, that sounds really good, all this kind of stuff. And really, I gotta say, at first I was a little taken aback by it, I was thinking, I want to sell this book to comic book fans. I don't want it to just be like, just some little idea for some Hollywood producer guy or something like that. Even though, and even when they say optioning, that it's not going to get made into a movie.
No,
it's not. I mean, they just buy ideas. I really think in Hollywood they're completely out of ideas.
Well,
so they just buy up everybody else's ideas, and then when they have...
When they've
turned every old 70s Sherwood Schwartz television show into a movie, and they're out of other things to do, they'll go, what do we got under here? Here we go. We have another idea, because we're plumb out of ideas, and it's like, I want to sell my book to
I think there's some more. I think there's some more Aaron Spelling shows that can be made into
movies.
Yeah,
there's a few. Well, there's about 5 billion of them.
90210, the movie, it's got to be coming out.
No, you need another at least 8 years.
What price would the your conscience just kind of, fold in on itself and
give
in?
Oh, I have no
in.
Idea. Dave is cheap. That kind of stuff. What the hell? But, that kind of stuff is a complete mystery to me. I don't understand it. I'm from the Midwest. I don't get all this Hollywood claptrap stuff. But it seems like that in comic books, there's a million billion ideas, and there's new ideas coming up all the time, and people have all these ideas.
There's a movie that comes out every month in comics that are better than most of the movies that are being made. But the thing is, these options are being bought up in all of these comics, and they just sit out there. We talked to Phil Hester, 3 months ago? And he talked about, you know, one of the things that turned his career around was getting the coffin optioned. And this happened at the same time that he was starting to draw.
Jim Cameron optioned it, didn't he?
Yeah, right. But this is like the same time that he's working with Kevin Smith on Green Arrow. That's been how long ago now?
Five years ago? 2001.
It's a fantastic book if nobody's ever read it, by the way.
A Quiver?
No, Coffin.
Coffin is brilliant. Coffin. It's a great book.
Well, I mean, I think, it's not just comic book options. It's, you know, script options, options. They just buy them up because they have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always like, what's next? Movie producers' jobs are to try and find out what's going to be popular next. So it's like, that film X made this amount of money. We got to find something that's like it. So let's just buy up every option we can so that when that film hits, we have something to make that's similar to it.
I think that's kind of it. But I don't think they've run out of ideas. They just found a new place to get ideas.
Yeah, they're mining creative people.
Before, it used to be finding novels and then just buying the rights to those. Now it's comic books where a lot of guys who 30 Days a Night was a movie he tried to get made, couldn't do it, made it into a comic book, and then they came calling like they'd never heard of it before.
But it kind of makes me sick because these guys out there are floating in money. They're just throwing money at things. Oh, that's a good money. Oh yeah, money.
Somebody's better.
They're throwing somebody's money, or very, just not throwing
bitter.
It at
yeah,
you?
Yeah, well, if they throw a little bit at me, but that's the thing, you know. You've got the place where all the ideas are really being born, and there's no money. In comic books, there's no money.
So if they throw $50,000, you'll shut up.
It's the audience, though. I mean,
oh no, I'll just get louder.
There's, I mean, you can't blame.
Because you can afford to.
I can buy a speaker.
You can't blame the amp. You can't blame the film industry because they've made stuff that people want to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, comic books have done.
Didn't see.
Well, true enough, but that's one person. You're talking about the masses, and that's the difference. Is that, you know. We talk about the horrors and the terror, you know, the simple minds and the uncreative people that are in movies, but their job is not to come up with something revolutionary or even intelligent. It's to come up with something that the most amount of people will find interesting and spend $9 to go to the theater
to see. It's to go to the lowest, it's to go safe and to go to the lowest common denominator.
Sure.
The thing is that whenever you get a good movie that slips through the cracks and actually gets made, and then it's suddenly huge because everybody's going, finally, a movie like this. Everybody's been yearning for this movie.
Blair Witch Project.
So then they beat
that was a piece of crap.
But
it was a brilliant marketing.
Different. And so you get a lot of these kind of movies, and suddenly they make a lot. You know, they're always really cheap to make because it's some guy's special little pet project. And then it makes... You know, twice as, you know, 10, 15, 20
times more
than it
took to make.
But
those are, I mean, those are pretty rare compared to...
That's just because that's the ones that's been able to slip through. I think if you got more of those...
Oh, come on, go watch the Independent Film Channel. There's tons of crap on there that are made for cheap.
I know,
but
when I think about...
There's a lot of bad movies made, too.
When I think about when the best movies were made, I think it's because the studio system went down in flames. And so in really the 70s is when the best movies got made.
70s were a great decade for movies.
And the reason it is...
And also a terrible decade for movies.
Yeah, but there was just as much garbage being churned out.
It was a great decade for music, but it had disco, too.
Yeah, but you finally had... You had crap being made, and you had so many really just... top quality things
well,
being
that's,
made because
I mean,
it was allowed to be made. The studio system
that's like
had broken down.
The 40s and 50s, though. I mean, you talk about all the classic films that came out of there, whether it's Casablanca or Citizen Kane or whatever you might want to talk about. But during that time, there were more movies made than any other time in history. They were churning them out day after day after day. And they had no idea. They weren't trying to make great films. They were just trying to make films. And they were just churning them out to see what would stick. And, there were some that came out that have been... able to last the test of time.
The spaghetti principle. You throw enough on the wall and, you know, eventually it's going to stick.
But back then they were the only game in town, too. Yeah.
Well,
so
true.
The movie audience
tell you,
is a lot bigger.
Let's bring things back into comic
Don't
books.
Don't try and control me.
Hey.
Don't tell me what to do.
Settle
talk
down,
about.
You two. That's enough.
Oh, Dave's turning green.
Oh, good Lord.
Dave smash.
Ang Lee standing behind him. There are a ton of movies out there that people don't even realize are based on comic books. I talked to people about History of Violence.
That was a comic? Oh.
Yeah. Ghost World.
Road to Perdition.
Road to Perdition. Yeah, there are some, and that's where a lot of these options are coming from. Because
I don't know, the only thing I found more boring than Ghost World the movie was Ghost World the comic book, but that's just me.
Sorry,
I liked Ghost World the movie. I think those are sort of the
exception,
ran
20 minutes
though.
Too long.
I liked it more than the comic.
Well, who was the... who was in that? It was Steve Buscemi and...
No, it's
Johansson.
Johansson.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson. Real, one of her first movies,
like,
wasn't it?
Like, yeah, I think it was like her first movie that she was really... That anybody noticed
She was
her.
In... She was in something as a little kid, and I can't think of I was just reading an article about her the other day.
But, you know, isn't that interesting how much indie comics have started to be mined for movies? Because, you know, if you look at the two mediums, basically comics, as Sin City proved, can be storyboards for movies. It's all there. It's sequential art and storytelling. It's all there. So I see that Hollywood has been able to mine the indie comics world. They can buy these up as cheap options, and they translate into movies and movie scripts so easily.
Those movies that you talked about, I mean, can you name any more than that? I mean, there really are the rare exceptions. I mean, most of the comic book movies that are getting made is X-Men, X-Men 2,
X-Men
3.
Well, V for Vendetta. You had The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, as awful as that was made, but it was still a
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing a long time ago.
Straight to video.
But I think the independent comic stuff is attractive to these people because, cheapness is one thing. There's not a licensing deal that, you know, they don't have to go to Marvel or DC.
Right. I know why.
But the
other
thing
why it's appealing.
They also don't have to stay that loyal to the subject matter because,
The fan base.
They don't have to attach the stigma of saying this is a comic book.
And they don't.
And they don't.
That's why nobody realizes that those movies were comic books.
When Road to Perdition came out, when History of Violence came out, not once did I ever hear outside of the comics world that based on the graphic novel, none of that was there.
And that drives me crazy because it's like they're ashamed of it, and
everybody
still.
Absolutely, they're ashamed of it.
Yeah, and then everybody still thinks, well, comic books can only be superhero stuff, and I love superhero comics, but you want. I want the world at large to know that Road to Perdition was a comic, that History of Violence was a comic, you know, that these are the kind of stories that we're telling in comic books, too. But nobody wants to admit it when they make the movie.
Robert Rodriguez was just adamant about making sure that Frank Miller's name was on that movie. It was Frank Miller's Sin City. And I think from the Wayman fan out there,
he couldn't get Frank to do it otherwise.
is that how?
He had been trying to get Sin City made for quite a while, and Frank Miller had no interest in doing it until he finally flew him down to Austin, I think, or San Antonio, wherever he's at.
Down in Texas.
Got him a couple hookers.
Down in Texas, and showed him what he was doing with the green screens
He'd
and everything.
Good.
And showed him how faithful to the book he could be. Mm-hmm. And then once they started working on it together, I don't think there was any question that it was going to be Frank Miller's Sin City.
Well,
but
Robert Rodriguez actually...
But he co-directed it with him. He put him as a co-director.
And Rodriguez had to drop out of the Directors Guild because of that.
Yeah, because of the co-direction.
But my point is that I think it was very apparent to people that, you know, because Rodriguez put Frank Miller's name on it, made sure that everyone knew that this is based on Frank's work, which was so amazing, most people realized that it was based on graphic novels. Yeah. And which is funny because, you know, they never said comic books, and Sin City came out as a comic book first, not as a graphic novel. But I think for the layman fan, they see that as the highest form of art for comics now.
The graphic novel,
Because it wasn't a superhero movie. But you look at something like Road to Perdition, they would never associate that with a graphic novel because the general public still thinks of comics as the genre of superheroes.
Well, why should they, though? I mean, what is their basis? Why would they want to? They've paid the licensing. They've bought the property. They have no. I mean, they have
because
no
it would make
to,
me happy.
Well, that's all. That's. Yeah. I mean, you're just saying you want you want people to know that it's based on a comic book, so you don't feel bad about reading comics.
Well, yeah, the problem is that their fan base is
you're picking on the aren't
you? Well, no, I'm just what's the point? I mean, you can't blame. I mean, a movie studio.
Oh,
why
sure,
would
sure.
They...
There's part of me that wants people to accept the medium as something beyond capes and cowls. I love capes and cowls too.
Yeah, I'm right there.
But I want people to see it as a true American art form, which is what it is. And I always saw movies.
Why do you care?
You know, I'm caring less and less all the time.
Well, wouldn't it help the industry that we love? I mean, wouldn't more people get into comics, want to read
comics?
No,
I don't think more people are going to read comics.
You don't like the man,
if you called them something else, if you called them something other than comic books, if you tried to get, you know, I mean, I don't think you... I think the only thing that will ever change that is time and good quality stuff. As long as there is... as long as you can go to a comic book store and pick out any, you know... any comic off the rack that is the worst example of comic book making,
so
people will never ever, well, whatever it may be, people are never going
you
to.
You are
ex-
playing
it's never
Tom
going
today.
To be accepted again as a mass medium, like it was in the you know in the 40s and 50s, just because there are too many things that people, you know, there's too much competition for it. One,
well,
but I don't know how it's going to help by. I mean, I understand the point. I understand trying to, you know, wanting it is the association so that, once again, but I think it just comes down to our own egos of, like, we want people to not think we're nerds because we read comics.
Maybe,
well, I don't really, you know, I don't care.
But there are people that I talk, you know, they're like friends and family members where I go, well, you know, there's all sorts of stories being told in comics, and I feel like they're missing it. You know, like they're missing out on some of the best stories being told because, oh, it's a comic book and they don't want to read a comic book, but I think the best stories out there are in comic books and they're missing out. They'll read a regular book because you know they like
know.
To read that, but I would like them to be able to get and read a comic book because
as much as I love comic books, to compare them to a medium like, you know, novels, I
don't think there's any problem with. I mean, they're basically just graphic novels. That's the whole name of them. They wouldn't name it that way. It's an illustrated book.
They're not. They're not.
I mean, my wife has a book club of all the queer things to have. She has a book club where the girls get together, they pick a book, and blah, and I keep trying to get her to pick, a graphic novel, a Watchmen, a trade, something like that, or something, you know, less powered up. And she just won't do it because it's a comic book.
Sure. Well,
and
they're
even
not.
Though she,
they're
even
they're
though she
stories,
has read a few,
yeah.
She's read a couple, and she's kind of enjoyed them.
And these stories aren't lesser stories, just because, you know, they aren't lesser stories because it's not a novel and because it has pictures. These are stories that are just as good as anything that's in a novel, if not
easily.
Better.
I've read some novels that...
Certainly. There's some horrible novels
even
out there.
Classics.
But on the...
Frankenstein.
Average, or on the ratio of between... I mean, how many great comics have been produced in the last... you know, whatever, 60 years, that you can compare with the great works of literature.
Well, the great works of books that have come out in the last 60 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I think you can compare that.
We're getting on to
an that's
entirely
another...
different show, and Sal and I have talked to this at length, and it is another show, and we will talk about comics' place in literature, and I think there are some works in comics that we've gone.
Movies?
Yes, movies, movies. Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 was awesome.
AroundComics.com, your source for discussion, news, and reviews about your favorite comics and creators. New podcasts available every Monday. Go to www.aroundcomics.com.
So anyway, going off of the film option, have you guys, you know, I know that one of my favorite authors and two of my favorite comic series have been optioned, and I'll see if you guys know of any others they have, but Greg Rucka's Whiteout and Queen and Country may be coming to the big screen. It could be years and years away, but that, there's the Queen and Country reference for the show.
Every show,
Ding.
Queen and Country.
So those are two that I can't wait to see on the big screen. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think would be great comics that are either currently running or that you've read in the past that would make great movies? Who wants to go first? Mr. Wachter.
Well, some of the stuff I've been reading now I think would be
We're in a comic book shop, and everyone is looking around.
Right. Well, I was thinking about what I hear from a lot of people a lot, and I totally agree with them, is that not only movies, but I also have to think of like HBO miniseries and stuff like that. Can I group that in then? Because I would say something.
Yeah. Okay.
Because there's some because of the format that comics are. Sometimes it just feel like
it's very episodic, and you feel like you need more than that 2 hour window.
An hour a week
window.
On HBO for whatever 12 episodes
I'll tell you,
or something
My one right and now, and you're gonna say it.
Yeah, it would there'd be Preacher, and then I think some of the books that are around right now, which I see as sort of because of Preacher, that these other books that are allowed out, but say The Walking Dead. Oh. Or Why the Last Man. These would be perfect books for a cable miniseries.
I have a couple. Well, Fables along the same
lines. Oh, yeah, Fables.
Fables
would be a great movie or a great TV show.
I think that would actually work better as a movie than a TV show, but that's me.
Global Frequency.
Oh, God.
Well, that was supposed to be a TV
show.
There was.
They actually made a pilot.
They made a pilot. You've seen it.
Yeah, I got it home.
Oh, bring it in.
Okay, it's actually really, really well done. But when I saw that, I'm like, man, this would have made a great movie, because I don't know if it would have worked as a TV series.
Here's the we're telling you what to buy for the week. If you have not picked up the 2 Global Frequency trade paperbacks, do yourself a favor, go get them, and thoroughly enjoy those
books.
Stop
looking around, Dave. They've been sold.
Don't tell me what
to buy. Sal, I know that you have a lot of opinions on movies and everything, on movies and comics. What is a series that you can't wait to get optioned?
That I can't wait to get optioned? Well, right. I think there's a couple out that I would like to see get optioned. I think for a TV show, I think Powers would be a phenomenal television show. And I don't even think you'd have to put it on like HBO or Showtime. It could be better if you did.
Yeah.
But I think you could do it on regular cable television and you know, just as a cop drama with superheroes, I think would be a phenomenal show. On a smaller budget, I think something like Local would be a fascinating film. I think you could do that in, you know, vignettes almost.
I think
American Flag is a sci-fi channel.
I was waiting for you.
Bike Club, Howard Jenkins Bike Club would probably.
Have you got
a lot of his stuff translates well because yeah.
that would
he,
it would be a great.
Such
this
a,
would really.
Have you guys read Bike Club?
Yes.
No. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Fight Club or Bike Club?
Bike Club. Actually, I was listening to Raging Bullets, is another comic book podcast. It is an all DC podcast, and they did a review of the entire Bike Club series.
So when's Tom moving on to that one?
Tom's under contract.
Not to
a
derail.
Nickel a week.
Exclusive.
I have a challenge movie for maybe one of the best accurate portrayals of a comic book, and it was a comic book second, but it was a book first, I think. But the Conan films, those were comic books. Those were great. I mean, the first movies, the second one was
those are novels.
Just answer me this.
Those were novels first.
Those
yeah,
were novels,
were, and then they
based
made
on comics.
Then, yeah.
What is best in life?
I mean, all the way around.
I'm not answering.
You know the line.
Yeah, well. What other movies? God, there's a lot. I mean, I liked the first Hellboy movie. I'd like to see more Hellboy.
Yeah, actually, I did too. My wife actually loves comic book movies.
Oh yeah, I know.
She loves
them.
She watches them more than
I do.
Well,
it makes it more credible.
Fantastic Four. She's watching Hellboy.
Well, it makes
she
it
loves
more,
Hellboy. I've seen her watch that more. She loves the Matrix movies that are kind of based in that comic-ish world.
I'd like to see them make a good Daredevil movie.
You know, parts of it were good though.
You know what I think would make a really good film? Maybe
the
is
credits
Bullets.
Were awesome.
Is what it's fun.
100 Bullets.
Oh, now
that
see,
could make a really interesting
that would be a great TV
series.
Show.
Yeah, like an HBO series.
HBO show.
Both, I think,
and you
I think,
can do that
think,
one pretty cheaply.
You could
too.
Do the first arc of 100 Bullets, and it would be a fantastic movie because you could leave it open ended. But I also think it would be a great
with Pelicanos as a writer. And
I'd like to. I would actually like to see Azzarello take a turn doing screenwriting.
Right, co-writer, fine.
George P. Pelicanos, which now we've talked a little bit about novels. George Pelicanos is a novelist that has worked in TV. If you've watched The Wire, which is fantastic, I would definitely suggest checking out his novel work, which his first novel was called King Suckerman. He actually wrote a three-part...
You had me at Sucker.
King Suckerman is a brilliant, brilliant book. So check that out if you like that whole crime noirish kind of. It's almost a Pulp Fiction feel to his writing, but you know, that's a guy that's gone from novels is now doing screenwriting for TV. I think he's a producer for The Wire.
I just thought of two.
He's
others,
a writer
actually.
On there.
Is he a writer also?
He writes also.
I just thought of two others that would probably work really well, but it's hard to say as a movie or like an HBO type show movie. You know, like kind of DMZ.
Yeah.
Would be really, really cool.
I need Brian Wood stuff, I think.
Well, not all of it. Yeah, they'd be good.
Supermarket would be kick ass.
Yeah, that would be good. I think I talked to a couple of guys in L.A. who were trying to do a pitch for demo.
Uh-huh.
And it just sounded awful. They wanted to do, they were doing a pitch. It was these two writers, and they're not listening now, I'm sure of it. And they're, because they're also talking to us. And they're like, oh, get away.
What are their names, Dave?
what do they look
Billy
like?
Billy and
where
Jimmy G.
What was the pitch?
The pitch is they wanted to do a show, they wanted to pitch it to Sci-Fi because they felt that Sci-Fi Channel needed, like, a teen ensemble cast show.
So they wanted a WB show.
Right, basically a WB show. Yeah, that's the way I took it.
A Sci-B show.
But making demo into that. And I wanted to jump across the table and just slap these guys.
Has everyone here read Demo?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was okay.
Is it Brian Wood's best work?
It's good. I liked it.
I liked it.
Is it Brian Wood's best work?
It's not my favorite of his.
Yeah. I thought it was Brian Wood with Training Wheels. Yeah. I thought it was him.
Early. Yeah.
Testing out some things.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Taurus graphic novel, if you read that.
I'll tell you the movie I want to see.
It's early Wood.
I'll stand on Brian Wood for just a second. I love Local and DMZ and Supermarket. They're all brilliant. I thought Demo was very interesting. I thought it was more of a concept work. And for 12 issues, it was 12 nicely contained issues. I thought it was a neat project. Check it out if you want to, but Local and DMZ.
I liked it a lot. Amazing. It's the only thing I've seen from him where I've been able to go to the end of it. Everything else, I'm only like 4 or 5 issues into.
Yeah.
And this one, I was able to see 1 through 12. The fact that it was short little vignette things. Each one was about their own, and none of these characters mixed. And they wanted to turn it into some sort of like hip X-Men.
Yeah.
Type of thing, and I was like, "Well, these were just 12."
Don't they already have
stories.
That Generation X or what is that? Mutant X,
Unlimited.
It lasted like 3 episodes or something.
Mutant X
was a syndicated show.
It's been around for like I think it's still on.
No, it was on a couple of years.
It was on a little while.
And it was just, but I think it was actually produced by the.
Well, Sal actually had a coherent thought, which we'll come back to here.
I completely forgot it. Oh, the movie I really want to see, like going back like mainstream stuff, Green Lantern. I'd love to see a Green Lantern with the
cool.
CGI.
Alan Scott or Hal Jordan?
Both. Why not? Throw them both in there.
Here, I got one.
I don't
for,
know.
I
Hal
got,
Jordan. I mean,
you
me
both.
Personally.
I mean, kind of an early.
Oh, you got to do Hal Jordan. Got to do Hal. Absolutely.
Hal. You know what would make a really cool animated film or a weekly cartoon?
I got an idea.
The Goon. If you did the Goon, like in the vein of like The Simpsons
so cool.
or Family Guy, where it was
could be done
knife
way.
To the eye,
the Goon could
be much, much cooler animated.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, the animation would probably be such a letdown after Eric Powell's art.
They could do something there if they tried something new there. Something they could. I don't know.
You know what they do?
They
go back and do.
Can you imagine? I mean, Eric Powell computer animated. Version his art though
it's got
to
be
it would
it's,
have to be it could be
nah.
they could I've seen different things
ever,
done with computers than just the
have you guys
you know,
seen
the Toy Story statues? Stuff yeah. they could do something they
have you ever seen the way back when before the Lord of the Rings films they had done animated versions of those
The Hobbit
and Frank Frazetta was involved with those and they were trying the same guys that
the rotoscope
you could do something like that but those same guys they developed an animation technology this was back like late 70s early 80s or whatever and they were trying to do a Frank Frazetta animated film and they wanted to replicate his art. And they actually came pretty darn close. It was like rotoscope, but it was much more animated. You know, I mean, it looked much more like drawings, and they were really trying to capture his style of artwork. And I can't remember what the film. It was like it might have been Death Dealer, or I don't remember. But it was, and they never made it. They never made the film. But I saw some video of the animation. It was pretty cool. And if you could kind of do that with,
well, speaking of animation and like anime, and I know that you
Akira.
Were, you know that you, I know that you're a fan of this. But what do you think about Girls?
I can't talk about Girls. The last time I did, I got reamed out by.
But you liked it.
Yeah,
who,
I liked
her. Who did you get reamed out by?
I can't think of her name. She's
who
a
did?
She's a
I can't beat up Girls.
On the, it was on the Warren Ellis board, and I put up a review of Girls that I really, you know, I really liked that book, and she just came on and tore me apart. She was much smarter than I am.
Naked girls in it, and she just doesn't.
Yeah, well, that was the basis. I mean, she said it was very, you know, misogynistic and misanthropic.
I know that's what I like about it.
Oh,
well,
God,
you know, and I really didn't see it that way. But
pull the
whatever.
Legs out from under our chair.
I could see Girls working as a sci-fi. You know, would make a really interesting little like. Maybe a short film would be the Exterminators, just like a short, you know, almost like Tales from the Crypt, you know, if you, you know, that just
that would be a great HBO series. What do you guys think about Invincible? As I'm kind of looking
I
around,
was thinking,
here.
I was thinking that actually a little while ago. We were talking.
I don't read it.
Break in. I think that would be a
you
very,
don't read
I
Invincible.
Cool.
I have the first hardcover and I read that.
I think that I one would.
Oh, you didn't like that?
I think that one. Did
it's
you hold
Spider-Man
you read the first,
White.
You said you read the first trade. You said
first hardcover. I think I bought.
Did you get to the part where what his dad does?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
I haven't read it.
All right.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I haven't gone back to it.
Man, you're missing out on a really good book.
Hey, I got so much crap.
But
to read.
It would be a, it would be a very WB-like show, I think.
All right. Well, guys, I tell you what. What's real things in? Let's get some final thoughts.
Here's a film. One more film. Ooh, Captain Dingleberry by Rick Remender.
Okay. Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Yes. Another Rick Remender reference.
Planetary, actually, I was thinking about.
Well,
yeah, Planetary.
Anything by Warren Ellis, basically, is what it ends up being.
Yeah.
But
oh, Planetary would
be
awesome.
Would
be
fantastic.
Authority. You know, hey,
they
what?
They
what?
Do a Transmet at one time, didn't they?
I think.
Yes,
I
they did.
It was
I think
supposed
I heard
to have like Patrick Stewart in it, I believe.
Yeah,
something
I think
like that.
Yeah.
It all fell apart.
What? Let's throw a bone or two to our guest that was not
Billy
able
Zane
to get. Will you listen to me? Stop talking.
What,
you
are you?
Yes,
talking?
You stop.
But is he
Jonah
Hex? Is he talking to me? I can't
Fear
tell.
Agent.
Fear Agent would be a great sci-fi.
I can see the
movie.
Animator. I can see a movie
with Bruce Campbell.
As Heath Houston.
Yeah.
He could be
if he was
he
a little bit younger,
right
well, actually, he could do him
he
right
could play
now.
It right
God,
now.
God, that would be perfect
no,
casting.
No, Eric Bana.
Shut up.
Bruce Campbell
is that,
as
is that they don't have, God, there's no, you know, the sci-fi movies they make these days.
Because that's
such
a, it'd be
like
a great 19, they could do that 1950s
They tried to do The Tick, remember?
Movie.
Did you
I
ever
mean,
watch The Tick
oh,
TV
The
show?
Tick was hilarious.
The Tick, have you seen the live action?
Yeah. The cartoon was great. The live action
show
was
is fantastic.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't
with Patrick
care
Warburton.
For
mm-hmm. Oh, he could be.
He was absolutely. He could
Patrick
be.
Patrick Warburton
yeah,
could
Patrick
be.
Patrick Warburton could be him too.
He could be.
Warburton, who?
He played
Buddy.
The Tick. He played
Buddy.
Or,
Buddy.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, how's it going?
I think, you know, Remender has such a good feel for. Fairly contained stories. You look at Strange Girl, which I think would be a really fun movie.
I think the Hulk would make an excellent film.
I think the
Hulk.
I think
it already did.
I think they could make a fantastic movie of the Hulk.
And they did. Thank God they did.
You know, we didn't talk of another film.
When was
that?
Which one was that? The Hulk meets Daredevil. Which movie was that?
Oh, okay. Stop talking.
American Splendor. Which was a great movie
Harvey,
about.
Wow, we didn't think about that one.
Yeah. Harry P. Harvey Picard.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, you know, really I saw. Have you guys ever seen the David Letterman Picard?
Yeah, they just had that
on
had
YouTube.
Linked on YouTube. Oh god.
Oh god, that
cringe.
Was brutal.
Cringe just makes you go, oh my god.
Oh, Picard was such an ass, and Dave is just like, I'm gonna poke this pencil in your eye.
I don't think either of them were looking too good in that clip.
No, yeah. not at all. But yeah, you know, American Splendor was a very interesting look at not just comic books, but you know, the life of someone involved in comic books. You know, so I thought that was it was
which
great.
Is what
but
his comic
actually,
book is about, which is good. You
yeah,
because it's
well,
just his
think,
life.
And it had
so
and it had Giamatti.
One thing we never really got to was
Paul
like
Giamatti.
Some of the documentaries they've made on comics, like the R. Crumb.
Oh yeah,
the Crumb documentary.
Crumb,
which is you ever seen that?
Yeah, I've watched that like three or four times.
Oh my god, that thing is fantastic.
I can't stop watching it because it, like when it gets to his family and stuff, his brother
it's,
and
it's just the most bizarre
insane,
world ever.
And he's an interesting guy, but I mean, there's some
and
serious
like horse,
psychological. Oh, I didn't.
Machi.
Hey, caramba. I don't know. There's so many films.
You know,
that could
we didn't even talk about the X movies, which is funny because
Iron
X
Man's coming out. Ghost Rider's coming out.
Long episode.
Oh,
just talk about the news.
Ghost Rider, I'm so scared of that.
That trailer looked great.
The trailer looked cool, but I think we saw the best part of the movie.
Yeah, well, the motorcycle going up the side of the building.
Yeah, I think
the motorcycle itself.
I think it'd be better if it was not Nicolas Cage. That's the biggest thing that's scary.
No, come on.
I like Nicolas Cage in other films. I love him in like Matchstick Men,
but they're using Johnny Blaze. They're using
Valley Girl.
a washed out stuntman. You know what I mean? He's Evel Knievel light.
What scares me about that movie is that I think it's been done for like a year and it's not being released till next February.
Some of the special effects and stuff to make it look better.
I tell you that shot where you've got the motorcycle. Ghost Rider next to the Old West Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
I would watch just
fantastic.
For that.
Yeah.
It's probably a 3-second clip.
Oh,
I'll
go.
That'll be it.
I'm good. I'm there. But
I'll see it. I've seen everything.
There's a ton of great movies coming out. So, you know, really for a comic fan, it's...
I'm waiting for Lost Girls, the movie. Lost Girls.
We started with Slash Fiction.
You know that's
going to
happen. Come
fiction.
On. Give me a break.
Lost Girls. What the hell is that?
That's the Alan Moore.
Alice in Wonderland. Peter Pan.
Yeah.
That's going to be from. You know, that's going to be a. That'll be a great. We'll never see the end of that film. we'll see like the first 15-20 minutes of it. Everybody will know what the first 15-20 minutes of that film looks like. No one will know how it ends.
You know what could be a beautiful film would be, only because I see it on the wall now, is Kabuki.
Ang Lee film.
Ang Lee doing Kabuki, that would be bad. Mm-hmm.
And when I go back to the girls thing, I think girls would actually make a really cool movie.
Yeah, girls.
Don't have to do the nudity. I think the nudity works for the story. Yeah. I do think the book is moving a little slow, but it's still a great story.
Yeah.
And that girl that berated Sal.
No, she.
I'm coming for you.
Hey, she had her opinion.
I think that kind of.
She's actually like a longtime columnist in comics and pretty well respected. Which
and we are going to take.
I'm
her
not.
Down.
So
we respect.
But
well,
we're
no,
respected
respect
for
you.
She kind of ripped you up. I mean, it's.
Well, I think
it worked for the story.
Well, she didn't rip me apart.
It really
worked
for the story. It is misogynist, but
it left comics and went into other topics like we do a lot. Okay, well, guys, let's wrap up the topic.
One more.
Okay, everyone gets one more last thought on something they want in comic book movies, or they like, or they hate. Dave Wachter, go.
What was this part again?
All right, Sal.
No. I just want to say one more thing.
Oh, man.
Is that for a great television show, that would be like a cool, I don't know, make Fell a television show.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
nice one.
I don't think you could, though. God.
That
could be screwed
up
so easily.
Well, they all could.
Well, yeah, true enough. You're right.
I mean,
it could be
that's
phenomenal.
That's the low budget of low budget,
that, that needs to
yeah.
be. That needs to
you
be
gritty.
So
you got,
surreal.
Like, four streets, a bar, a house.
You know who needs to direct that is White... Twin Peaks guy?
David Lynch.
David Lynch directing for...
If
you can rein
it like,
in...
It needs to be like Lemony Snicket surreal.
All I gotta say is Lost Highway.
Tim Burton? Is Tim Burton just gonna direct every comic book movie?
No,
Lemony Snicket's? Come on, dude.
I love Lemony Snicket's.
Yeah, but it's not the same vein as Fell.
No, but just kind of
Fell
dark
is David Lynch. Come
no,
on.
No,
absolutely David
Lynch.
David
Stop Lynch. It. I shouldn't even have mentioned it.
It's David Lynch.
All right, Sal.
Screw that.
I had one and now I completely forgot. Damn it. Go
Mark.
Back. Go to Mark and I'll come back.
I'm not even a big fan of the comic, but G.I. Joe would be. The original. Just go.
Because
Joe
he's
movie.
A real American hero?
Because he is a real American hero. I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
I'm still
thinking. I just saw a title on him.
Dead Man. I think that would be kind of a cool character that you could do an interesting film about. God, and I had a really good one, and now I forgot it. Darn it.
I got one now.
Okay.
I just remembered it. Doc Frankenstein.
Oh, I thought about that,
that
too.
That would be a really cool...
that would be good.
That's a cool...
That could be a two-hour movie.
That's where Chosky Brothers are, right?
Besides, the movie might come out before the fifth issue does. And
yeah, no kidding. God, I had a great one, and I can't think of it now.
Did it involve,
no.
Liquor?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right.
Did it involve...
I... My final thoughts are, I like movies.
Did it involve Smurfs or Care Bears?
I like comics.
We didn't actually do final thoughts.
No,
Doug,
we didn't,
Chris.
Actually. We're just naming stuff, Mr.
Geez.
This is what we're doing. Give me your final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts are, Dave's insane for liking the Hulk. I hope Mark gets a She-Hulk movie made for him.
God, yes.
I don't know. I think, you know what, like I said, even the worst of the superhero movies that are being made today, I'll still watch. And because there's just something about them, you know, just, and for me personally, it's you know, it's a dream come true to see all these characters up there on the screens, because it melds the two biggest, you know, loves of my, you know, films and comic books. So
I have to say that it's the same thing. I just love seeing all these great movies being made, whether they're crappy or not. I still enjoy all of them. I still go see them all. It's really cool to see even badly done ones like Daredevil. I still enjoyed it to some degree. I mean, you liked it or you didn't like it?
I did like it.
I didn't say it was I didn't say it was freaking horrible like
better
that.
Than the Hulk.
I didn't say it was better
oh,
I didn't say it was worse than the Hulk. I just said it was
wasn't
great. But even parts of the Hulk, I really enjoyed parts of the Hulk.
Yeah. You know, when he was throwing tanks around.
When I go see a movie based on Hulking. Comics, I just go in looking for some entertainment, just like I do when I walk into the comic shop and look at the wall. I look for a book that looks entertaining for a couple of minutes. I look for a movie that looks entertaining.
You thought about
and
it.
I really enjoy it.
Shazam.
Oh, that would be cool.
I want Shazam a good would be. Shazam movie.
They're making that.
Are they?
Yeah.
Good.
With Billy Batson.
No,
and the
they, no, didn't you hear their...
Well, that's right. They didn't announce they were making
yes,
Shazam.
They haven't announced
yeah.
who it's going to be.
The Rock.
Be.
Is it...
Oh, really?
No,
oh,
I don't know, but
oh,
I think
it's Black
be,
Adam.
Oh, here's one of mine.
He would be a good Black Adam.
Dave, have you read Whiteout by Greg Rucka?
No.
Amazing. It's a FBI agent in Antarctica, but you've watched Battlestar Galactica, the new one.
Yes.
I finally did think of the one.
Starbuck, the guy who plays Starbuck.
Yeah. Yes.
That's who Greg Rucka really wants to play.
Yeah, she would be perfect, wouldn't she?
Yes. And I'm just like, oh, hell yeah.
I'd definitely go see a Queen of Country film. Or even a TV show.
Yeah. Only one Queen of Country mentioned per episode.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
That was like bookend.
I did finally think beginning? Of the. Well, uh-huh. I think I don't know if you could do it in a TV show. It almost. It would, I mean, in a movie, maybe a TV show, but Black Hole. That I mean
the
that
Disney
would be a,
film.
I saw
no,
that movie.
Not
the robots.
Or I think
Borgnine.
Oh, that is being done. What am I thinking about?
It is.
Gaiman's writing the screen.
Yeah,
for
you just
that.
Pay attention to your own news, perhaps.
Not,
you might
not
be
really.
Just
Black Hole.
Cut paste. Cut.
Hey, dude, I see it every day.
All right, my
these
final
the
thoughts.
Final thoughts ever.
Thank you, Rick Remender. We're sorry that we were technically unable to talk to you, and God, I missed Tom.
Can we start singing and now?
What? We're not
thanks
good
so
enough
what
for
am I,
you?
Chopped
Tom,
liver?
Come back to us.
Screw Tom Caters.
All right. We love movies. We love comics. We are around
Ooh,
comics.
Tom Caters.
And now it's time to move over to the news desk. It is time for Wire to Wire Comic News.
Yeah!
These are your top headlines for the week of May 29th, 2006. Dynamite Entertainment proudly announced that they are including a third John Romita Jr. cover on the upcoming Red Sonja number 12, the issue which features the return of Kulan Gath as Sonja's greatest nemesis. In addition to the previously announced Jim Lee and George Perez covers, a third cover will be available in equal rotation, featuring the pairing of John Romita Jr. and John Romita Sr. In homage to John Romita Jr.'s classic cover depicting Kulan Gath on the cover of Uncanny X-Men number 190. The piece, penciled by Jr. and inked by Sr., now features Gath and Red Sonja in the famous pose. Image Comics announced that Diamond has completely sold out of Fear Agent number 4 by Rick Remender, Tony Moore, Mike Manley, and Lee Loridge. A specially priced trade paperback collecting Fear Agent number 1 through 4 has already been scheduled and will be in stores on June 21st. Created by Rick Remender and Tony Moore, Fear Agent is the story of down-and-out alien exterminator Heath Houston, who stumbles upon an extraterrestrial plot to commit genocide on humanity. Meanwhile, he is forced to choose between the bottle and resuming his role as peacemaker, as the last Fear Agent. with Godland nearing its first anniversary, and Joe Casey and Tom Scioli's Cosmic Superhero series continuing to attract rave reviews, Image Comics has announced a trade paperback collecting Godland 7 through 12 that will hit shelves in late July. Written by Casey with art by Scioli, Godland has received increasing critical acclaim following the release of Godland Volume 1 in January. Godland Volume 2, Another Sunny Delight, is a 160-page trade paperback with a cover price of $14.95 and is available for order in the May issue of Previews with an in-store date of July 26th. Alvin Schwartz and Harvey Kurtzman have been selected to receive the 2006 Bill Finger Award for Excellence in Comic Book Writing. The choice was made unanimously by a Blue Ribbon committee chaired by writer and historian Mark Evanier. The Bill Finger Award was instituted last year under the supervision of comic book legend Jerry Robinson. Among Schwartz's many enduring contributions to the Superman mythology, he wrote the first tale of Bizarro, a character who became a part of popular culture. Schwartz also worked on Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and many more DC properties before departing the field of comics in 1958. Kurtzman distinguished himself as the editor/creator of Mad Magazine and the author of its classic early issues, and with War Comics as the editor/writer of Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat. The awards will be presented during the Eisner Awards ceremony at this summer's Comic-Con on Friday, July 21st. Organizers of the New York Comic-Con, which had its debut at New York City's Jacob K. Javits Center in February of this year, have announced that the show will double in size and will move to an upstairs location at the Javits Center for 2007. The New York Comic-Con garnered considerable attention when it was launched this year. Legions of fans numbering over 33,000 supporters turned out for the show. This year, the New York Comic-Con will take place on February 23rd, 24th, and 25th. The New York Comic-Con has been scheduled so as to not overlap with any other show dates, including MegaCon. Tickets for the New York Comic-Con will go on sale on August 1st at www.nycomiccon.com. Marvel Entertainment Inc. announced that the company has entered into a new agreement with Avi Arad to independently produce films for Marvel under his own production company banner, Avi Arad Productions. In this new capacity, Mr. Arad will remain actively involved in Marvel's upcoming film slate, including Iron Man and The Hulk, the first two films anticipated to be financed and produced by Marvel under its new film financing slate. Mr. Arad will also remain attached to produce various licensed productions, including the upcoming Spider-Man 3, scheduled for release next year. Consistent with this restructuring, Mr. Arad is resigning from his corporate positions as Chairman and CEO of Marvel Studios, Chief Creative Officer of Marvel, and as a Marvel Director, but he will continue to serve as Creative Advisor for Marvel through the remainder of 2006. On Saturday, May 27th, Alex Toth passed away at the age of 77. Alex Toth was best known for his work at Hanna-Barbera in the 1960s and 70s. Mr. Toth was responsible for many of their character creations, Space Ghost and Super Friends being among them. His son Eric said that he passed away while at his drawing table. Love and Rockets' 25th Anniversary. After reading early issues of the scathing news and critical publication, The Comics Journal, back in 1981, two Mexican-American brothers decided to send their self-published comic book to the magazine for review, figuring, or so the legend goes, that if they could take criticism from The Comics Journal, they could take it from anybody. Turns out the journal liked that first issue so much that they and Fantagraphics publisher Gary Groth offered to publish the first issue of Jamie and Gilbert Hernandez comic book Love and Rockets, and in the process changed American cartooning forever. Now in time for the series' 25th anniversary and a new generation of readers, Fantagraphics has announced plans to republish the entire 15-volume Love and Rockets trade paper backlist, reformatted into 7 manga-sized volumes, beginning in January of 2007. The new books, $14.95 each, will split the stories of Jamie and Gilbert into separate books. These have been your top headlines for the week of May 29th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, please go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
And those are your top headlines for the week. Let's go ahead and start at the top. Dynamite Entertainment is going to be releasing a John Romita Jr., John Romita Sr. variant cover for Red Sonja number 12. You guys...
And?
Well, what is interesting about this, beyond the normal variant covers, is that it's basically a retake on an earlier John Romita Jr. Uncanny X-Men, which was from number 190. It's a classic cover if you dug that era of X-Men.
What's the villain again?
Kulan Goth.
Kulan Goth, yeah. He redoes, because Kulan Goth was in that... He was in a arc, I guess you would call it, at that time of X-Men, mm-hmm. 190 to...
Yeah. It was a pretty good one, actually.
Yeah, it was. Story. But now that he's back and
in Red Sonja's
Sonja, and yeah, he basically redoes that cover for a variant.
And it's cool. You check it out at aroundcomics.com, and it actually does a side by side comparison. And you know, Kulan Goth is in the same pose, and you know, Red Sonja's, you know, laying down on the ground. So yeah, what I did like about this as a variant cover is that it is in equal rotation, which, you know, I know that there are folks out there that do the chase covers that try and find the 1 in 10 or the 1 in 25 covers, but what I like about this is that it is going to be, you know, one-third of all the covers out there.
They do that every month, though. They have, it's usually 3 to 4 covers for every Red Sonja, equal numbers
mm-hmm.
every month. So, I mean, that's not a new thing for them.
Well, they've been doing that from the beginning.
Yeah, and they only do a couple of variants right now.
Is Mike Omien still writing that?
Yeah.
Honestly, Red Sonja is not a character that really interests me. I know that Sal is more of a, you know, the Conan type and Red Sonja, but that character is not one that I seek out that much.
I don't seek out Conan either, actually. It's okay. I can read an issue here or there. And
I read the first, I don't know how many issues of the new Conan, and I liked it a lot, but I just...
Is that when Busick was writing it?
No, it was. He's writing it now.
No, actually, Busick's been off for about, what, 5 months now?
Has he?
Yeah.
I haven't noticed. I don't read the damn book.
Maybe it was when he was there. Yeah, I don't remember.
Busick started. But I liked it, very good.
I've just read so much Conan stuff in my life. I mean, from the books to the... I used to get the, you know, the big oversized Conan and Krull the Conqueror magazines and everything. And
that was
Krull. Or, I'm sorry, yeah, you're right. Krull was that horrible movie.
Yeah. Speaking of bad movies, there are Krull.
Krull. I actually like Krull almost more than I did Conan, but...
Wasn't that the guy that played Hercules? Well, didn't he do Cull?
I don't know. I don't think so. That was
we're way off.
Talking about the TV show,
but it's very good. Like I said, I think I've just read so much Conan stuff that it's just not something I'm looking for anymore.
Well,
sword's a sword.
Yeah. Next story. You know, it's really a bummer because our guest tonight that we really wanted to have on and weren't able to. We have a Rick Remender story, and that is that Fear Agent number 4 completely sold out. Hope you have it out there. I don't see that they had any plans to reprint it, even though I'm sure that they probably will.
I'm sure
they'll
bring out some variant covers to sucker some more people.
Probably. they do have the trade paperback, which will include that issue. Looks like they say a specially priced trade paperback for issues 1 through 4. I would assume Image actually announced a lot of trades that were coming out, and I think their special price is $9.99.
Well, so a lot of them do that, though. So is Y.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first trade.
That's a great price for a trade.
Yeah, there's
though.
A lot of trades that are $9.99. I think all the Teen Titans trades are $9.99.
I'll drop $10 on a trade for just about anything.
I think that should be the uniform price for trades, $10.
Yeah.
I hate when they're $19.99. It's like
it hurts.
Yeah, it's six issues, it's usually, and the,
it's,
you know,
no,
it's
like, for, it's usually for the books that are a lot, like Squadron Supreme. I think it's like $24.95. But V for Vendetta, which was 10 issues.
The Preacher ones.
Watchmen
aren't
was
like $19.99.
Yeah, I think the Preacher ones are
but,
15. Some of them are a little
books.
More expensive.
Yeah. They're big books.
Big books, lots of death.
But coming back, you know, Fear Agent, sold out.
Fantastic.
If you haven't picked that up, if you like sci-fi, if you like action adventure, if you like humor.
Two-fisted men of action.
Two-fisted man of action.
We're telling you what to read.
We are telling you how to spend your money. Pick up Fear Agent. It is just one of the funnest books out there right now. Tony Moore art, how can you go wrong? And I don't know if he's going to be on the series much longer. I heard that he's actually moving on.
Well, they had planned that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Does he stay on anything for too long? He's like a nomad, for God's sake.
You know, that's okay. I don't mind that because he's on Exterminators. I know he won't be on that, you know, for much longer.
That much longer.
But then he'll go on to something else, and I'll pick that up, and I'll love it, and it'll get me into another book.
I like having... I mean, extended. When an artist sets a tone and a feel for a book,
I wish he would stick
and
around.
Then to pick up and leave.
Well, has it hurt
for the end of it?
Has it hurt Walking Dead?
No, but
then shut up.
It hasn't because the stories are so fantastic. But I mean, I do have problems with the art now. Is I sometimes
Did
have a hard time
kill
telling who's who. Sometimes.
Walking Dead.
Well, I mean,
because there are a couple of characters that just look similarly like the way this guy draws them.
Yeah, you know, I love Tony Moore's
Tony
art
Moore,
on Walking Dead.
You
but
could
the
always
story
tell.
I wish I could remember who it is that is taking over, and he's pretty darn good
for Fear Agent.
Yeah, artist himself, well, and I can't
actually,
think of his name.
One of the cool things is that they're doing Tales of the Fear Agent, which are going to be little like mini stories in the
little
back
vignettes.
Of Fear Agent. Yeah, little vignettes of when Heath Houston was a Fear Agent before he was the last Fear Agent, so I'm really looking forward to that. And it's gonna be a different artist
like the
for
last
each one of them.
Starfighter?
It's gonna be like the Dark like the Dark Tower series that's coming out.
It's
in
like
February.
The Lone
Ranger. Have you heard the Dark Tower series from Stephen King?
No.
I
thought you were talking about the store.
No. it's based on the store.
No, that's been pushed back to way next year.
Based on Mark,
because we started in 1842 and
Mark was a cowboy.
You hear who's writing Dark Tower? The comic adaptions?
No.
Peter David.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Yeah. I tell you what.
But those were, what I'm saying, the comics are based on early stories of the main character.
Yes.
Before the book.
He's too good.
Which is kind of the third novel out of the Dark Tower series, but.
Kind of.
Yes. Godland. They have released the first one. Came out in January. Mm-hmm. Big time critical acclaim. It's a book that I have not gotten into. I've had about 18,000 people suggest it to me. I know
one
I.
Book.
Dave, you've read it?
It is. It's a great book, yeah. I mean, the art is basically Kirby. You
okay.
Know? So if you...
Esque?
No, I wouldn't even say
no,
esque.
No, it looks... He's right. It looks,
is,
it looks
it's channeled,
just like Kirby.
It is
channeled
Kirby,
Jack Kirby
channeled through. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. It's the closest I've seen besides, like, John Byrne when he does, like, flashbacks. And he does that Kirby because he does it pretty dead on.
And it's good. I mean, you know, you can't get Kirby in a monthly series. So you have to get some sort of big, thick edition of something that's already been printed.
Well, you know,
and they're good stories.
Is writing good
stories
on it?
Yeah, it is. It's totally Cosmic Man.
Well, you know, there's that Jack Kirby book coming out.
Isn't that the first trade was actually called Totally
Cosmic.
Yeah,
his daughter's Bounty Hunters, Intergalactic Bounty Hunters.
That's such
isn't
a
his
Jack,
daughter
that's
writing
a
it or
Jack
something?
Kirby title right there.
Oh, yeah.
Intergalactic Bounty Hunters.
Well, we're looking at Godland Volume 2. Another Sunny Delight is hitting stands on July 26th. So,
now, is that book like, I mean, is it sort of a comedy? Is it a funny book or is it a...
A little bit. It's more, it's like
serious.
Out there.
Yeah,
you know, it's like...
Totally
well, it
cosmic.
Takes a lot of the... It is. It's like totally cosmic, man. I mean, it takes a lot of that old kind of... Kirby feel to it, but then I think it takes it to a slightly different level, you know? I mean,
I've heard
the characters
good
in
it
are
it.
Like the villains in it are just kind of nuts.
If my
know?
Local comic shop carried the trade, I'd probably pick it up, but
oh, yeah,
me too.
Your local online comic shop, you mean?
No, the one that he goes to every Friday.
They're my internet comic shop.
Where did you pick up Fear Agent number 4? Where was that?
All right, you jokers. Bill Finger Awards. First of all, I think it's great that...
Giving him the finger.
Well, I think there is a great that it's the Bill Finger Awards.
In case you don't know who Bill Finger is or was...
You should.
Well...
I think he's passed away.
Yeah, I think he is.
We'll have to run it through Tom in the fact-checking department.
And the monkeys.
But Bill Finger basically has as much claim to the Batman character as Bob Kane does.
He just didn't sign as good a deal as Bob Kane did.
Exactly.
Actually, I have a litho at home from him.
a signed litho.
So I think it's wonderful that there is a Bill Finger Award that's presented during the Eisner Awards. So he needs to be remembered because comics would not be what they are today without Bill Finger. But we're looking at a couple guys here, and that's Alvin Schwartz and Harvey Kurtzman. First of all, Schwartz, big in the Superman universe. He's the guy that came up with Bizarro. And you look at the list that that they listed off. It's Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern. You know, the guy was all over the DC universe. So, you know, this is an Excellence in Comic Writing Award, and it looks like he was all over the DCU. Now, I think probably for this panel, you know, Schwartz, you, Mark, a
yes.
fan?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Tell us a little about
it. No, not at all.
Okay.
You're lying, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, I know that a lot of the folks on this panel, Mad Magazine fans.
We can't all have cheat sheets like Chris.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Hey, shh. Harvey Kurtzman, Mad Magazine. He worked in tons of war comics. I think he was at EC Comics. So, you know, once again.
Famous funnies.
Yeah, giants of the industry being recognized, that's exactly how it should be.
Yeah, you know, now that I think about it, like, I think Mad Magazine was probably my first introduction to comics.
To sequential art.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I read that stuff before I ever read comic books. I used to buy Mad and Crazy, and then they had Cracked, and there were a couple other ones, too. And that
I mean, they were true comic books.
Oh, yeah, those were some funny stuff. Back in the day. So yeah, Harvey Kurtzman. And I know Kurtzman, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know he helped usher in a lot of big names in artists now. You know, guys that you would recognize their names now, he helped get them started in comics and stuff.
The New York Comic Con, I don't know if we should call it an utter disaster, but the utter disaster that was the New York Comic Con this year.
Disaster for some. I mean, you know, when you have to turn people away, that's not a disaster for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I guess an utter disaster would have been,
unprepared.
Yeah. 3,000 people show up, but it was 33,000 people that got in, and I think it was probably
like
closer
20,000
to like
or something.
Yeah,
outside.
like 55,000 yeah, people tried.
They're
so.
Like turning away people that were. You know, guests there. And
oh, yeah. I heard stories. I think the Comic Geek Speak guys were talking about standing in line outside trying to get in, and they were, like, standing next to, like, Dan DiDio, you know, who, like,
yeah,
had...
Because if they walked out... Oh, yeah, well, they had the fire marshals there and everything.
Yeah, they well, were packed, and so. I guess the thing, you know, and there are a lot of folks that are listening that were probably there or know more about it than we do, but apparently, Dave. Like... All of the panels were across the street, and if you went to a panel and left the main convention floor, you were out. Yeah, you were done.
Up.
So they're moving next year. They're moving up to the third floor, which is
was it at the Javits Center? Or where was
yeah,
it?
Yes, Javits Center. But the okay. Javits Center
that's
is kind of like well, no, it's kind of like the McCormick Plaza here in Chicago.
I've been there. Segmented.
Yeah, and so it's now I guess the third floor of the Javits Center is much
premier,
larger. Yeah.
Okay, that's where I think I was actually. We had a different job I had. We had a
and not for
there.
Comic books because it
no,
had
it
been.
In, it was,
God,
in,
what,
it was in the exciting world of framing.
Ooh,
but it was a huge. It was a pretty huge.
So framing gets the third floor, and comic books get put down in the freaking
well,
basement.
Huge money in framing, man. Anybody who's framed a picture will know.
They weren't sure.
Framed one.
Yeah,
it's friggin' expensive.
Oh yeah,
it's ridiculously expensive.
They weren't sure if New York could handle a con, if they could support a con again. And
you're like the largest city in America.
Say, yeah. Didn't know if we could actually support one here with the 9.5 million people that live here.
And like
and
half
the
comics.
Million
yeah.
that live in these outskirts.
And half the comics in the world are based in New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, that New York
yeah.
is
nobody
comics.
Reads comics.
It's,
no.
like a,
York,
it's, like a Gurney, it's like a Gurney Mills convention. Like 2,000 people show up. That's all they're expecting.
Well, anyway, next year the convention will be on February 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Con tickets go on sale August 1st, so they're gonna go on sale
sign
early.
Sign up quick so you can be turned away first.
Yeah, exactly. And for the people that bought those VIP passes and got screwed last year, but you can go to www. at nycomiccon.com for more information.
Their second year, and they have just made themselves the most expensive comic book convention for exhibitors.
Dave, you exhibit a lot. What's it cost to exhibit there?
Well, the New York one?
Yeah.
$12.50 and a reach around?
More than every other show, even the San Diego or any of the
What's the average?
Well, let's take an Artist Alley table, which is like the lowest price thing you can get. Wizard just bumped their price up this year to $300, up from $250 for an 8-foot table, right? So it's $300 now for Wizard.
For a $10 8-foot table, okay.
For New York, it's $350 for a 6-foot table.
Okay.
The booth prices are really high, too. I don't have the figures in front of me, but it's like a couple grand just to get the smallest booth. And they're small booths. It's like 48 square feet as opposed to 100 square. It's like, you know,
New York prices,
6x8
baby.
Versus 10x10 at any other place. But
New York prices.
I guess. And then you got to pay for your hotel and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
it's going to be higher.
Air travel.
I'm pretty much priced out of that one.
Yeah. Well, you as a small independent make a lot of cons, and it's. I would like to see them make it a little bit more affordable for the small press guys.
Yeah, me too.
Moving ahead, Marvel Entertainment Inc. announced that Avi Arad has resigned all of his positions at Marvel, and it looks like he's going into the movie production studio business. So it looks like this is obviously going to be a relationship between Arad and Marvel. And he's starting up a production company, and that's who's going to do Marvel movies. And
wow,
he's already
a surprise.
Yeah, there's a surprise. So, I mean, is this a surprise? Is this going to affect the comics that we buy? Is it going to affect the movies we see? We talked about movies in the first part of the episode. Having Marvel work with Avi Arad Productions, is that going to help the final product? Is it going
to
matter?
Sounds like a tax loop. To me, it sounds like it's like, you know, Marvel can pay him instead of paying him a salary. They hire him, and then it's tax deductible. You know.
Well, I heard that I just heard this, but that he was having some sway as to what kind of stories are being told in the comics, so that they work better with the movies.
Sure, that's been talked about for years, ever since like the first X movie, and
all of a sudden they're in black costumes, very similar.
So
did Morrison start that? But you know, it's like, you know, well, we need to start drawing Wolverine more like Hugh Jackman.
I read an interesting article on the Superman movie.
You went from 5 foot two to 6 foot tall.
They were saying that somebody was maybe it might have been a blogger, I don't remember, but. They were noticing, like, from the stills from the new Superman movie, they were taking a look at, like, the Daily Planet and what Metropolis looked like, and then they were looking at the new issues of Action and Superman, and, like, they were changing what the Daily Planet looked like to look more like what was in the movies and stuff.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's a perfect example of the comics changing to fit the movies, but... You know, once again, the movies really don't try and push viewers back into, you know, into the comic shops, and that's a shame.
I think, absolutely.
And I think that, you know, one question is who's going to be the next chairman and CEO of Marvel? Who's going to be the chief creative officer?
Oh, I didn't
Tom
tell you
Caters.
Guys.
Oh, congratulations!
Yeah,
I'm
going to be off the show starting in about 3 weeks. I got a new gig.
But Tom said he got that job.
Yeah, no, Tom's my dictation machine.
Is this going to be someone that we as fans have heard of as far as an industry person? You know, or is it they going to bring in someone in from the outside?
Gatson. I think maybe.
I think Jim Shooter's coming back. So back on schedule.
I'd like him to bring James. What's his name?
Marvel Bash.
Jemis. How do you pronounce his name?
Jemis.
Paul Jemis. Is that his name? Bill Jemis. Bill Jemis.
Bill Jemis.
I'd like him to bring him back, man. Yeah. Shake it up a little.
There
get things
go.
Crazy.
Hey, I like what Marvel's
getting
doing
a fight
right
with
now.
Joe Quesada.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Joe's going to remain as EIC.
He's not EIC. Is he?
Yeah, he's
anymore?
The editor-in-chief.
I thought he changed his title. I thought they changed his title to something else.
No, that's...
He's the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever. A rose by any...
They're all
rose
a bunch of suits.
Okay, guys. Sad news. Alex Toth passed away. We have been talking about Mr. Toth for the last 3 weeks now. We recorded last week on Friday night, and Saturday morning woke up and looked on a couple forums, and it's like, oh, man, you know, it's we've been talking about this guy.
Wasn't like the day after?
Yeah, it was
you guys recorded.
Yeah, it was that Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was like the day after we recorded.
And well, we put in a clip last week that Sal actually I came home, I saw the news, I recorded a small audio bit and sent it to Sal and said, hey, can you splice this in, because I think it's important to mention this since we did talk about Alex Toth during the show. And he's like, oh man, I've already got it posted. So Sal actually pulled it off the servers, re-edited it, reloaded it up, and that for anyone listening out there, with the little hiccup on Monday with it being posted a little late, was so we could get the news about Alex Toth passing away. So that's why that we've talked about him for the last 3 weeks. Giant in the industry, amazing talent, affected so many of the things that we have seen growing up, whether it's any of his Hanna-Barbera work or, you know, work on Zorro, X-Men.
He worked for Marvel, DC, Dell, EC Comics, Famous Funnies. He did a lot of war comics. He did Zorro. He did Johnny Quest.
Somebody did homework.
He didn't do his homework. Sal is a huge Alex Toth.
Are you a Tothhead? Tothhead?
I'm a Tothhead. Yeah. No, I've been Zorro was one of my favorite comics I was a kid.
Hispanic hero.
Yeah, and I, you know, Space Ghost was obviously a huge, you know, I loved Space Ghost as a kid. And when I found out the two were, you know, related.
Connected
with Alex Toth, I was even more excited about it. But, you can look at, there are dozens and dozens of artists in
the
industry today.
What's the Andy Park story you told me this week?
Oh, he had posted on the Bendis board, there was a thread started about Alex's passing, and he had went in there and posted, you know, how sad he was to hear about it, and that, you know, the stuff he and Phil Hester does, or what they do together, wouldn't have been possible if it wasn't for Alex Toth, because, I mean, he was just such a huge influence on them. And then he came back later and posted a panel from a page he had done in a war comic, I think it was for Dell, and it was like a fighter pilot getting off of a jet, and it was only like four panels on a page. And it was just gorgeous, and he said, yeah, I posted this, and then I looked at it, and I figured out the math, and he was like 25 years old when he did it. He's like, God, I hate Alex Toth. He was just so talented, and a lot of people don't know his work or don't, you know, haven't read his stuff or seen a lot of his art. But, I mean, if you like stuff like Michael Arc's work or Phil Hester's work or
Michael Gatos,
even Frank Miller, I mean, there's just dozens, probably dozens and dozens and dozens of artists out there that have been influenced by his work. And at the time he was doing it, you know, there wasn't really much of anything like it. You know, that sort of, I don't want to say noir, because his style wasn't really noir, but it was just simple black and white.
Mike Mignola.
Even Mike Mignola, yeah. I think, was influenced by it. But he was truly unique in a lot of what he did, and a huge presence in comics. And, you know, I think anybody that's ever, you know, seen his stuff would agree with that.
Well, you know, I think one last point on Alex Toth, and we'll move on. He died at his drawing table. And I think that is a perfect end.
Literally?
He died at his drawing table.
At the Alex Toth message board, it was the news was broken by John Hitchcock, shop owner who was releasing that
Dear
book.
Alex Toth, yeah.
He said that Alex's son, or Grant, no, I'm sorry.
No, it was his son, Eric Toth.
Was it his son?
Yes.
His son, Eric, had sent him a message saying that he had died that morning at his art table. So.
I'm sorry, as an artist, you can't go, it can't get any better.
You know, it's poetry for a guy like that.
So, and you know, it's.
Was drawing. I mean, he had been sick recently, but he had been drawing, you know.
How old was he? Was he
77.
He'd be 78 like next month or this month.
This month, yeah, he was almost 78. So, rest in peace, Alex Toth. Thank you for your contribution.
And I say I hope that everybody buys that book, because they said the money, once they recoup
everything after the printing,
financial cost. Everything goes to Toth's family.
Yeah.
So I definitely plan on ordering issues for the store, so I hope everybody goes out and buys
it. Yeah, it's a 1995 pickup, Dear Oxtoth.
It should be fascinating.
Yeah, it's 25 years of letters and correspondence and doodles and sketches between John Hitchcock and Oxtoth. So pick that up. It's $20, and it's $20 well spent on one of the giants of this industry that we love. So please, please pick that up. 25 years of Love and Rockets. Is that hard to believe?
Well, it's harder to believe is that they're,
and it hasn't been consistent.
They still don't have a damn set of books out that complete everything that those, you know, the whole story.
But they will now.
No, they won't.
Oh, it's not.
It's not.
It's going to be a Love and Rockets bus.
It's they're republishing the 15 trades in a manga
size. In a different size.
In a different size, and it's still not going to have everything. If you're like a completist, if you want, it's still not going to have.
Why is that?
I don't know, because
I'd be willing to buy it if it was everything, because I do like the Hernandez Brothers. I love the
Jesus, just release it in an omnibus already.
Well, they released the two big books, Palomar and Locas, and they're beautiful. They're oversized hardcover, gorgeous books, but they don't have everything in it. There's a lot of stories left out of them, and so people were like, well, you know, what they were hoping they were going to release, like, that material in a book, you know, by itself, but they're not. And then
just another oversized hardcover.
No, these aren't oversized. These are trades.
Yeah,
they're 15 trades that are actually small.
They're digest.
They're digest size. Yeah. But it's still. I was reading on the Fantagraphics board, the editor of it. I can't remember her name. She was saying that it's still not. There's still some stuff that is not going to be in there. It's not a complete. It's close, but
so
there's still.
What is the frickin' point?
I don't. Because I think.
Think of the format.
It's the story. No. It's
no,
the
think,
story
think,
that's
no,
told.
No, it's the format. Think of the format.
Well, no, it's. The stuff that's not in there doesn't really fall into the story correctly, or it's side story stuff that doesn't. And that's what they were trying to publish. Like the complete story, front to back, not the complete work.
Okay, well, there's the point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that actually makes more sense.
But if you go to the Fantagraphics board, there's a thread on there, and they actually like she actually broke down if you have the original issues, if you have the original trades, if you have the Locust book or the Palomar book, and you're looking to get everything, she kind of gave you a breakdown of what you needed to buy to complete everything. Honestly, it's so much stuff. I mean, it's 25 years worth of work. It is so. I have the two big books, and it's going to take me years to get through it just because
they tomes.
They're huge, and it's gorgeous stuff. I mean, you know, their work is just amazing. And
what are they doing these days?
They're still
Love and Rockets comes out once.
Love and Rockets. Yeah, they're still working on.
I mean, but is that what they do? Is that they work on anything else?
I honestly don't know. I don't know that they're doing any other comic work. They've been doing it for 25 years, man.
Yeah.
Take a break.
I believe they did a porn comic for Eros.
Yeah, well,
which I greatly enjoyed.
All right, guys.
The first 7 pages.
That is your news for the week. Hope you enjoyed it. We're going to move over to our reviews and recommendations. It means it's time for Top of the Stack. That's right. It's Top of the Stack. It's our chance to let you, the listener, know what our panel has been reading for the last week or so. I'm going to go ahead and start with my Top of the Stack this week. I've been alternating from indie to mainstream, it seems like, the last month or so. This week, I'm going to flip back over to the indie side. I'm going to be talking about Borrowed Time. It is the first of a limited series. It is written by Neil Schaefer. It is illustrated by Joe Infinari. And it is published by Oni Press, one of my favorite publishers. And this first issue retailed for a hefty $6.95. It is more of a digest-sized comic. It is all black and white, which everybody knows that I'm a big fan of the black and white art these days. This book...
You don't have to prove yourself to anyone.
I know. I love grayscaling, you know. I don't want to give away a lot of this book. It's a lot of it is, you know, in the story, a little twists and turns. What I will say is that if you like the show Lost, if you like J. Michael Straczynski's brilliant miniseries Midnight Nation, you may want to check this out. It's basically centered around a writer that is doing a story on the Bermuda Triangle, and as in every comic book, whenever someone goes to the Bermuda Triangle, they disappear. And that is exactly what happens in this book, but what happens after he disappears is where the real story picks up. And it is a story about getting lost, trying to find your way back home, and it sets up a what appears to be a very interesting story about one man's adventure to get back to the woman that he loves. It's a very basic story in that that is his main driving force. He has no other ambition except to get back to his soon-to-be wife. Borrowed Time, I liked it. I didn't think it was the greatest book in the world, but it's just the first issue, and it hooked me enough that I'm going to stick along for the ride. So if you like the Lost Midnight Nation type story, check out Borrowed Time. Don't let that $7 price tag scare you off too much. I thought it was worth it. So that is my top of the
stack. So really, it was your almost top of the stack.
You know, honestly, this was a real tough week for me, top of the stack wise, besides work being insanely busy and me not being able to read a whole lot of comics that I finally just about plowed through Black Hole, which is not top of the stack material. It is entire episode material. I read a lot of mainstream stuff. I read Ultimate Fantastic Four this week, which starts the new Frightful Four,
which was pretty good.
Which was really good. Local came out, which I've done before. The end of Ultimate Extinction came out this week, which I thought was a nice finish to that. Maybe a little hurried, but
I like the end of that too, though.
That, and there's a few indie books that are out there that I honestly haven't had a chance to check out yet. I know Loaded Bible is one of them, and there's a couple people on the panel that have been real interested about doing that one as a top of the stack. There's what's the new one by Sam Keith that came out?
Oh, My Inner Bimbo.
Which I've had a couple friends tell me is really cool. So that's maybe future
which
top
it
of
actually,
the stack
it,
material.
Did sell, for us, it actually did sell out. So.
Yeah. It's speaking of selling out, we're actually selling
speaking
well.
Speaking of bimbos,
Matt Fraction's new trade, Five Fist of Science,
has sold
really well.
Actually, we sold out because I am buying the last copy.
And how many copies?
I never got to read. Just about 10 copies, basically, which... For a $13, even for a $13 trade, is surprisingly good. I mean, usually we get about that many for things like Fables or Why the Last Man, and I'm used to those selling out pretty quickly. But I'm not used to a book with a creator that's not really that well known
yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's about to do a couple of big books, one for Image, one for Marvel.
Yeah.
And an artist that really nobody's heard of either, for the most part.
How'd you like the art in that?
I liked it actually. It worked well for the book. Yeah. I just flipped through. Like I said, I haven't read it yet. But I flipped through it. I did start reading it right before you guys were setting up for the show.
I
thought the art was really working for that type of.
Oh, for that period piece, yeah. Absolutely. I picked up Last of the Independents and Five Fist of Science this week. Mm-hmm. So this weekend is going to be a Fraction Fest. So those are the two that I'm going to be checking out this week. So anyway, it was my top of the stack, and Dave has something really interesting looking. So Dave, what is your top of the stack?
Yes, my top of the stack is came out a couple weeks ago. Will Eisner's John Law Detective, and the storyline here is called Angels and Ashes, Devils and Dust, and it's part one of a four-part story by Gary Chandler, or Challener, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he is the writer and illustrator, he does it all, and basically what this is, to put a little history into it, is that Eisner created this character, John Law, and his psychic, Newbin, actually created Newbin first, and then John Law was his friend, and then he switched them. And so Newman became the friend of John Law, detective, and created in 1948. This was one of his early stories, self-published stories, and he couldn't get it off the ground because of a failure of a couple of things before that. In 1950, he actually took the original, a lot of the original story, and it transformed it into The Spirit. Then again, and then finally in 1983, the original Eisner John Law stories were published by Eclipse Comics. But this one is now, this is an all new story. Chandler did some John Law a few years back, and I think that's all collected, and now this is a new one. Basically, to give you a little bit on the story, it starts out, this is the beginning of the story. Wherever men live, be they nomads or city dwellers, there they must have a law and a man to enforce it who is strong, decent, and believes in the rules he defends. Such a man is John Law, detective.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah,
dun, dun,
exactly. Dun. I mean, this is a perfect noir, a noir book. If you're into noir at all, basically a mysterious vixen walks through the door. Her husband, who's a crooked landlord, is missing. His building is burned down under mysterious circumstances, and all the tenants died within. And it's classic noir. It's black and white with those beautiful gray scales that Chris will love. And it's done in much
indie
of the,
snob.
Yeah, I mean indie snob. But it's also done in that Eisner style. You can really, it's almost like it's so Eisner influenced that if you like Will Eisner's work, I mean you're gonna love this too.
That one scene, I don't know if it's like the third or fourth page where he's looking out the window.
Oh, it's yeah.
That's just gorgeous, yeah. The way that the
whole book is like it, that. Yeah, it's such a gorgeous book.
And going on the story, because I read it last week, and you know what I liked about it, you were saying it is really a classic mm-hmm. crime noir story, and it's not a like a newer noir. I mean, it really
right.
has that
it's,
feel
it's,
of...
It's a period piece.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like it takes place in the 40s.
And it really did have that classic noir film feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a classic noir tale. It's cloaked in shadows and shades of gray. And it's really what noir was the darker side of a simpler time.
Yeah, and you're not even talking just about the art either. The story, the characters themselves, exactly.
All the archetypes of the characters are there. But it really, I think the best noir transcends mm-hmm. noir, you know, because noir is of. Is of a time.
How many times can we say noir?
Noir, noir. And it noir when it noir.
No, but you're absolutely right.
It's a classic story. It's the type of thing that you know, it's hard-boiled and tragic, but it's also mixed with enough heart and, mm-hmm. and just, you know, just enough humor that it makes it universally appealing. And even if, I mean, if you like noir, if you like Double Indemnity or The Third Man or any of those Raymond Chandler or any of those old movies, you'll love this, but you don't have to. You can, you know, if you just love a great detective story or just a great character driven story. And there's also, I mean, it's got, you know, it's mobsters, movie stars, and monsters, mobsters, movie stars. It's got
them
all.
What else do you need?
Yeah. There's also a short story called A Family Concern, which is a short story centered around his sidekick, Newman, the shoeshine boy. And basically that is that Christmas Eve, Newman is left alone to protect the ailing John Law, who's sick from appendicitis, and he must protect him from the gangsters who aim to take advantage of his vulnerable circumstances.
I loved how Newman, you know, it's like he's this little kid who, you know, he's a shoeshine boy, and John Law's like, I don't know, you know, he just like lives on the streets.
Yeah.
He doesn't know where he's from or where he came from or anything.
Right.
You know, he's just
and
like
he's
this
little
kid
who like he has like the inside track
right.
on
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, he's got
it's like,
know.
Hey, I got some info for you, John Law.
Yeah.
He's like, whatever, kid, whatever.
Yeah,
I'll get to
me.
You later. And then later he finds out, oh, the kid knew it all or something like that at all times. I mean, it's perfect. It, you know, and it's that kind of thing. You know, it's just great storytelling too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heartfelt and it's. And it's got everything.
The art was very Eisner-esque, but not, you know, it wasn't...
It's not exactly.
Right,
yeah,
it's not exactly.
It's his own
it's,
take
it's his
on
own style,
it.
But you can definitely see the influence and mm-hmm. not even an influence, but like homage to, you know, to Will Eisner stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. But, I will check that out.
It's published by IDW.
Oh.
And you can go.
Good for them.
Yeah, go online too and check it out because it was actually
a webcomic.
All the original stuff that he did in the previous stuff was done as a webcomic first. A lot of this book is also in a webcomic form that you can see, and that's at johnlaw.us.com.
Great. And we love stuff that IDW puts out.
Yeah,
sure.
Very, very good publisher. Mr. Salazar, what is your top of the stack?
Well, I'm doing one that I think, because Tom's not here, I'm doing a book that I think Tom would really like. I know
monkeys!
Actually, I know he
likes.
That's right. This
I'm
is
like
monkeys. Shadow Pact number one, which has actually two monkeys.
There's
and
a monkey.
Chimp. There's a chimp on the cover. That's the chimp detective, and then there's a monkey, a gorilla later on. But
that's an ape.
Yes, that's an ape.
Adult monkey.
Shadow Pact number one from DC Comics. It is written and drawn by Bill Willingham of Fables fame. I didn't know he was an artist. I've always liked his storytelling. But I wasn't aware he was an artist, and I was actually very impressed by the art in it. It reminded me a little bit of who's the guy who's doing All-Star Superman? Frank Quitely. It reminds me a little bit of Quitely stuff. I just liked it. I thought it was pretty good. But anyway, basically this story takes off after Day of Vengeance, the Day of Vengeance mini. And it starts out immediately sort of after that. And the beginning is really funny. It's the Phantom Stranger is called by Superman. Superman is flying over this town, and he sees this giant red bubble that's encompasses this entire town. And he flies down to check it out. And his X-ray vision can't get through it. His heat vision can't get through it. He can't punch through it. So he calls in some help, and he calls in the Green Lantern. He figures, well, you know, maybe he can figure something out. And the Green Lantern comes, and he can't do anything either. So the Phantom Stranger just pops up out of nowhere, which that's sort of his shtick. And the Phantom Stranger goes, well, you know, stand back, guys. I'm going to call in a group that, you know, only these guys can handle this dilemma. And he calls in Shadow Pact, which, if you read The Day of Vengeance, is the ragtag group of magically sort of connected characters that includes the Blue Devil and the Chimp Detective and I can't think of some of the other characters. But anyway, so they come to check it out, and they are able to create a doorway. The Phantom Stranger is able to create a doorway into this thing, and they all go inside. And then they disappear. And they're gone for the entire 1 year later. Now, nobody talks about that. They haven't, you know, it's all been Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman is the big deal that those three characters are gone for a year.
Who?
Yeah. Oh. Well, Shadow Pact has been missing for a year also, and
it's a grave concern. Much bigger story.
I think so, too. Personally, you know, whenever a chimp detective is missing, it's bound to be no good. But so they're gone for a year, and then it starts up after that year, basically, and starts telling you kind of what's going on during that year. As the Shadow Pact group is investigating what's going on, and it turns out it's a group of supervillains who have taken over this town, magical supervillains, Sister Shadow and Ragman and a bunch of other...
Love Ragman.
Yeah, and a bunch of other supervillains have taken over the town, and that's where it goes from there, and then madness ensues. But it was just... if you like the Day of Vengeance mini, which I really liked a lot, because the whole magical element in the DC universe, you know, sometimes it hasn't been explored all that much. And Bill Willingham's sort of the perfect writer to explore that, because he seems to really love, you know, mythology and magic and that, you know, mystical world of fantasy. So, and he's able
his
to...
His stuff on elementals is still so
good. Oh, yeah.
That's why I couldn't understand why you said you never knew that he drew...
I didn't know he drew.
His own.
He drew Elementals. That's right.
Did he draw Justice Machine too? Did he do that?
He did the first appearance. Well, it was the first appearance of the Elementals in Justice Machine, number one.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm a geek. Thank you.
I, you know what? No, I do remember now.
Kamiko.
No, it's
Kamiko.
Well,
what was the last thing he's drawn, though?
He's been writing for a long time.
He's best known for Elementals, and then he just kind
of
faded for a while, and then came out with Fables, which is freaking fantastic.
Yeah, he did a nice run on Robin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he also, he wrote the Days of Vengeance thing, and he wrote some of the Justice League stuff back when Giffen and DeMatteis were doing
He's definitely a talented writer. And like I said, Shadow Pact, it was an enjoyable read from seeing that group come back, and I like that group, and it's going to be interesting to see.
And it's got a smoking monkey.
It's got a smoking, drinking, but it looks like he's quitting drinking.
Yeah, that's going to last.
He's going on the wagon. Well, he is a chimp. But it's got a chimp, and then in the end of it, it's got a big gorilla. I don't know who the gorilla is because I'm not that familiar with these
characters.
Look what
I just found for Tom. One of the bonuses of recording in a comic shop is that you can get up and walk around and find interesting things. And I just found the classic Silver Age Superman action figures.
Age Superman robot.
This is the Silver Age Superman robot, which also includes a bonus Beppo the Super Monkey figure.
I'm wondering if they're going to bring like a Supergirl out with Streaky and the Super Cat.
You know, I think that Dark.
I think we found Tom's Christmas present.
I think that Dark Tower should donate this to its favorite around comic panelists.
When's his birthday?
I will find out because it's a monkey in a super suit, and that just
and a robot Superman.
Robots, monkeys, super suit.
Can't go wrong.
Well, I'm always surprised why he does my Liberty Meadows, because usually at the beginning of Liberty Meadows, it's from the monkey.
Actually, we have
from the head monkey.
Our June contest, which we're going to announce in a minute, is kind of inspired by Tom, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But Mr. Beatty, what's your top of the stack?
Oh, me now.
Yes, it's your turn.
I didn't know we decided on that.
Yeah, I think it was like the last second on these. Both me and Sal, last second, Johnny's here.
Hey, you know what? It's my own fault because I shop at a
online store.
Online
store doesn't get your books to you
and
on
I didn't
time.
Get. I usually get my books on Thursday. And I didn't get my books till today.
You're going to destroy the comic book industry.
All right, Beatty, give me your top of the stack. Right,
my choice is a comic from Image. Who is it? Who is it, Chris? It's a the title alone should make you buy this book. It's called Loaded Bible: Jesus versus Vampires.
Yes, watch out, vampires!
What is
here comes Jesus?
Vampires are like
Savior
the new
the
zombies.
What would Jesus do?
What was what?
Vampires are the new zombies.
They are.
Like
they
everything,
are.
Everything.
Well,
is
it's either vampires
vampire.
Or zombie. It's undead. No matter what you do, it's undead. Undead.
When's somebody gonna do like a good, Creature from the Black Lagoon book or?
Sooner or later, I'm sure Steve Niles will write one. He's written everything else so far. Every other monster. Okay, so basically, the basic premise is the government went God happy. They
went.
Well, they're going. We're heading that way right now. We're getting very, is it right wing or whatever? And it's
Christian
blasphemers.
It gets worse and worse
until they're
at odds with the rest of the world, which we already are. So basically, we're already halfway through the story in real life.
Yeah.
They at one point something that nobody thought existed appears: vampires, real vampires. Nobody thought they existed or anything else. The whole vampire nation. And at some point, the vampire nation, they have like a board of directors, basically, of like the elders.
Vampire nation.
And they attempt assassination of the president, which fails. The U.S. retaliates. Basically it's the end of the world, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And, of course, we come back and build a new city that's safe from everybody called the New Vatican City. And, the people, they reveled in their faith there, for they had a savior, a messiah. Jesus Christ.
Well, who else?
TV star.
is it a reality?
They pout him. Yeah, it's like they pout him like a reality show. It's on TV, showing him vanquishing vampires and with a mighty sword. And it's pretty. It's amusing and it's great and it's entertaining.
It's gory
and it's gory. And there are parts where he literally, a vampire just comes over the top of him and he turns around, literally flips his head back and spits. On him and his head, the vampire's head explodes. Why? Because, it's holy spit.
holy water, man.
Holy spit, Batman.
That's right.
I did flip through that book and Jesus kicks ass.
Now he gets, there's a point where Jesus basically has a crisis of faith, more or less, in himself. Because he kind of realizes that maybe his mentor is lying to him a little bit.
on things. And what happens
is they
capture one of the elder vampires who comes in, and basically he's attracted to her almost automatically.
A pure breed.
Because she's a hot dead chick.
And nice.
She basically reveals to him his true identity, which is that he's
spoiler.
He's a spoiler coming up. I'm telling you right now.
Here it goes.
Should I say it? Can I ruin it completely?
I haven't read this.
No spoilers on the top of the stack.
So since the book just came out, you're going to have to read to find out why. That's the basics
of it.
Did
you like it?
I really liked it.
Yeah. And who wrote it?
My friend Tim Seeley.
And where does Tim Seeley shop?
Tim Seeley shops here, and that has nothing to do with it.
Tim Seeley is
the artist. He was the artist of G.I. Joe for the longest time for Devil's Due.
And Forgotten Realms.
And he draws Forgotten Realms right now. And he's the creator of Hack Slash, which was optioned. He sold out, bastard.
Yes.
Good for him. Good for him.
Mike Norton did a story in there.
So, huh?
Mike Norton penciled a story in Hack Slash.
Yeah, he did. Exactly. Hack Slash is a really good series, too,
Tim Seeley is the anti-matter me, because we miss each other by like five minutes every week.
I actually believe they may be the same person.
Yeah. if we ever meet,
one
the
goes
world
out 5 minutes
explode.
Later, the other one walks in. They act like nothing is wrong. One does stand up taller than the other. And
all right.
One wears glasses.
It's amazing. Are you done?
No. Yeah, really.
I also read Loaded Bible, and I loved it.
Well, thank you.
It's got Dave Wachter's stamp of approval.
The guy that drew it, actually, I like the guy's art. His name is Nate Bellegarde, and I've never...
They showed the original art that it was going to be at one point, and I love the new stuff a lot.
Yeah, I like this guy's style. He'd be really great on Walking Dead, actually.
Yeah, Walking
he's very
Dead.
Similar. He's very similar to Walking Dead's original
Tony
artist.
Moore.
And there you go, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, kind of like that. Tony Moore.
Also,
Tony
Moore.
It reminded
very similar.
Me a little bit of the Invincible style.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah, actually, very much so.
Yeah.
So I liked it a lot. Very cool style of art. Very good book. Very enjoyable. Pick it up. It's only a one shot.
It is a mature book, right?
It's a one shot.
No, seriously. I mean, it's
no. It is. It is a mature book. So all
Jesus
you fighting all you,
vampires.
All you
no, it's for 4 year olds.
Right, run out quickly and buy a copy.
No, but I mean,
children, tell your parents that you're getting a strawberry shortcake.
I'm going to cut in that
tell
line
them it's a
for
book
Tom.
About Jesus. They'll let you have it.
Yeah, it's about Jesus.
It's about your Savior and Lord.
Well, okay. No, I mean, it could be. It doesn't. Just because it's Jesus fighting
it's
vampires.
It's a wholesome story about Jesus fighting vampires.
It's a wholesome story about redemption.
But no, my
and,
point was there's
well,
there's nudity and blood and, you know.
Yeah, all of that.
You could do
stuff.
Jesus fighting vampires
it's
without
a wholesome
nudity.
Story about bloodletting.
Oh, right.
I mean, there was one scene that would
that is our
piss off the Pope.
God. That's our
well, what
top of the stack.
The Pope. He's a vampire. You ever
he's
see him
undead, maybe.
We're all going to hell. All
right. I think we're going to bring this train wreck of an episode to an end. What's
I feel
wounded.
I am wounded.
All right. Well, that's the last time I'm on.
No. First of all, I would like to thank our panel. Mr. Wachter, thank you very much. How's scar tissue number 4 going?
It's going.
You going to get it done this weekend?
Not this weekend. God, don't put any more pressure on me.
All right.
Hopefully I'll have it done within the next week.
But you're looking at debuting at San Diego, right?
I'm going to try.
When's San Diego?
I swear I'm trying hard.
When's San Diego?
Mid-July.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man. Get on it already.
On it. All right. Mr. Beatty, thank you, as always, for hosting us and for being such a wonderful panel member. Sal,
you always
get
my Bill Finger Award.
I do want to give a shout out. We don't like to pat ourselves on the back too much. Wait, who am I kidding? Of course we do. I want to thank Sal for constantly keeping up the website, putting all of the news stories up, modding the forum, mixing the shows.
The only modding of the forum is keeping Mark in line.
Yeah, no shit.
Man, feel the love in this room.
For the listeners out there, Sal puts in so much work on this podcast. He drives probably 2 hours every Friday night to be here and does an amazing job mixing, editing, and posting this show. So, Sal, thank you. Thank you very, very much.
And those constant reach-arounds, I'm telling you, that is the highlight.
I have soft hands.
Yeah. All right, so some announcements here. First of all, please, if you download through iTunes, which we know that a lot of you guys do, because for one glorious day this week,
for like
18 hours, we were the number one comic book podcast on iTunes.
Oh,
All right. So anyway, we know that there are a lot of you guys out there. We appreciate you listening. Thank you. Please drop by the iTunes Music Store and write a review for us. Next is our June contest. We finished up our May contest. Matt Kramer was the winner, and we've got to get his trade sent out this week. Matt, it'll be in the mail soon, I promise you. Our June contest. We started this because, you know, we know that we have a lot of listeners out there. We kind of want to know where you're from, so we're thinking about just having you email us and doing a random drawing, but that's kind of boring.
Nude photos preferred.
We want you to email us, but we want you to write a haiku in your email.
And what's a haiku, Chris?
He doesn't know.
He didn't know before we started this.
I almost had it right.
Just write a haiku. It's in 575.
Five words, seven. It's three lines. Syllables. Five words, seven words, five words, 17 syllables. It doesn't have to rhyme.
Do a haiku.
Do it about comics, about a comic you like, about us, about around comics, about
Mark
monkeys,
Bay.
About
that, that's
Tom Caters.
Bonus points. For monkeys.
Ooh, monkeys. Ooh.
And so just think of it this way. There's probably only going to be like three people actually sending in a haiku, so your chances of winning
but
are really
you've got
good.
Like a 33.
Too many monkey, yeah. Too many monkey comments can't deter from your, detract from your score.
Oh, I think it's bonus points for monkeys. Balance. So anyway, you will probably have like a 33 and a third chance of winning if someone in. And we'll give you a trade. Same thing, $24.95 or less,
$7.99
in print, and that'll be sponsored by Dark Tower Comics.
Basically, Runaways.
Okay,
team.
Guys, thanks for all the great forum posts this week. We're sorry we didn't have Rick Remender on. We will maybe forward you his forward him
his phone number.
Your question.
If you just want to call him up and
we'll see.
Ask him
we'll
what
see
you
if
thought.
He'll answer some of those questions for us. Thank you very much. You can visit our forums two different ways. You can go to our home forum at aroundcomics.com. That's where Sal and I are pretty much all the time. Or you can visit us at comicgeekspeak.com. The forum family at Comic Geek Speak has grown to include now 11 comics podcasts. It's a great place to check out some of the best podcasts on the net and interact with their hosts and listeners. Around Comics and Dark Tower are pleased to announce that Michael Oliveri and Joe Bucco, the creators of Werewolves Call of the Wild, will be in store and in studio on Friday, June 30th for a book signing and guest appearance on the show. Check out their book at cotwcomic.com and listen to Around Comics for more information in the next week on the appearance. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for being on the show.
Of the night.
Everyone, have a fantastic week. We will be back again next Monday with another full-length episode of Around Comics. In the meantime, we will be everywhere in
and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.